afternoon. I'm Tyler Danberg. CBS is placing lead NFL analyst Tony Romo on leave until further notice after his OWI arrest last week. J.J. Watt will work with Jim Nance and Tracy Wolfson for the time being. Ohio State is now alma mater to pro football's highest paid corner and receiver. 3 days after the Browns extended Denzel Ward with a 2-year, $62 million deal, the Saints signed wideout Chris Olave for 4 years, $132 million. Soccer, the Crew and U.S. defender Max Arfstead is finalizing a deal with English side Middlesbrough for The Athletic. Columbus will get a $7.5 million fee with add-ons and will retain a sell-on clause. Baseball, Reds host the Pirates at 6:10, while the Guardians host the Diamondbacks at 7:10. Clippers host Toledo from Huntington Park at 7:05. PGA Tour, Cam Young leads round two of the Last Rocket Classic at 10-under. Breaking sports news when it happens right here with a fan, Ohio's sports destination.
It's time to add some spice to your nooner. Nooner. Funny. This is the place where big-time guests, bold opinions, and little cute doggies come together. This is Rothman and Ice.
Sponsored by Pella Columbus, the number one rated windows and doors in Columbus.
So where's the office back at Division? In the office, baby. Going up.
All right, here we go. Into the weekend with you guys. Good to have you aboard, Rothman and Ice. Anthony Rothman, Matty Ice Hayes, the Loose Cannon, everybody here. How we doing?
What up, what up? Feeling great, man. Feeling really great. How you doing right now?
Good.
I just got a couple pictures from my dad. He and my mom are at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland as we speak, and he just sent me a whole bunch of pictures of Jimi Hendrix. The Jimi Hendrix experience. So that's pretty cool. So yeah, they're up there in Cleveland doing that.
Ask him a question for me.
What do you need?
Sayer wants to know if Purple Haze is a relative. See what he says. As long as he's there. You know, as long as you mentioned it.
Yeah.
Just ask him.
So yeah, man, I'm all good. All good. And ready to cook with you, man. What's going on?
You know, I have no idea whether he's guilty or not. I don't. And I don't know whether or not he was driving while intoxicated.
I didn't know where we were going with this. Okay.
But CBS isn't waiting.
No.
They're not waiting. And this is one of those things where they could. They're not broadcast. He's not doing a game for a little while. They could let this play out a hair. Now, whether Tony Romo, I think the second, and I don't know all the details of this, but you know I'm an avid body cam watcher. I don't know if, my guess is he didn't give a breathalyzer.
I don't know.
When they asked him for a breath test when he got back to the jail, I don't think he provided one. When he did field sobrieties, and they felt like he didn't do well, then they cuffed him and they took him away. And then that's when you get back to the jail, that's when they offer you the breath test. And if you refuse the breath test and you've never been convicted of a DUI before, I think he's instantly going to lose his license for a year. Now, I don't know whether that's his license in Texas, his license in Wisconsin, everywhere. I assume it is. And then it would kind of die down. I think it would die down. I really do. I think he wasn't hurt. He didn't wreck. He didn't hurt somebody else, thank goodness. I'm not saying CBS did a wrong thing here. It's a little surprising that a guy, now, unless, I don't think they were looking to get out of the deal. They like him. J.J. Watt is there. Hmm. He's next man up.
Mm-hmm.
And they owe Romo $72 million over 4 years.
Yeah.
But that's probably only if he works. And I'm wondering now if they get out of that, if he is... Didn't do a breathalyzer, so there's some admission, I guess. There's not an admission. Let me put it another way. He didn't dispel everybody's allegation that he was driving intoxicated. He could have by blowing zeros or less than...
The legal limit.
Yeah. And so I'm wondering if they're taking advantage of this in some way, like... He would be moved on without cause. Now, what I'm reading is that he's taking a leave. So they're not firing him necessarily.
Just putting him on pause?
But the leave isn't like for the next few weeks. It says J.J. Watt is joining Nance and Wolfson as the lead NFL team during his absence. So
that,
just,
that to me, that screams regular season. That doesn't mean, oh, he's not going to be able to do a preseason game or two with Nance and Wolfson. Like, I think that's he's going to miss time through the regular season, maybe the whole regular season. Maybe he's done at CBS. I don't know. I'm very curious, and I don't think we'll ever know this, but behind the scenes, how much Nance is going to go to bat for him. Because Nance, obviously, his word holds a lot of weight because of who he is, especially at CBS. And so if Nance goes to bat for him, does that help him out? I have to imagine it'll help a little bit. All of this is obviously a bad look for Romo, who was in a unbelievable position. And so if they rip this away from him, he can't blame anybody but himself. And it'll be for him just a big time dropping of the ball, not only because of the opportunity that he gets every single Sunday in front of the world, but because of the financials that could be flushed down the toilet as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. He could get a citation, misdemeanor. He could lose his license for a year, and he could still call games. Like, I am a little surprised. He's their number one guy. You talk about who Nance wants to work with, but maybe the real part of this is the leave. How long is it? Is this more of a PR thing versus a real legitimate, hey, we don't want him anymore? Right. Like, maybe they felt they needed to do this. You know,
they don't have the Super Bowl this year. That's ESPN, right? I believe ESPN has the Super Bowl this year.
Not only that, and you guys can confirm this for me. I was talking with somebody the other day who said, hey, can you believe the Super Bowl is on Valentine's Day? And I said, okay.
Oh,
women watch women watch football too.
Absolutely.
And then he said, well, they should move it. Move what? Valentine's Day or the Super Bowl? Because the vote would be to move Valentine's Day. You're not going to upset the entire NFL schedule. Yeah. Hey, I'll tell you what, we're going to do one less week of prep for the players because it's Valentine's Day.
No.
And then the other thing is, it's a Super Bowl's on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Everybody will go out Saturday night.
So that's accurate. Sunday, February 14th.
Okay.
SoFi Stadium in Inglewood, California on ESPN and ABC. So
All right. It
falls on Valentine's Day and the day before President's Day for those who celebrate.
People don't want to go out on Valentine's Day anyway if it's a Sunday. I would tell you right now that if the Super Bowl wasn't that Sunday, let's say Valentine's Day was on a Sunday but not that Sunday, I bet people would still be celebrating Saturday night.
Probably.
Most people, I think the higher percentage.
We get a kickoff time for the Super Bowl. That's what?
6:30.
6:30, yeah. 7. So
6:30-ish.
Could sneak in maybe a nice Valentine's Day lunch, brunch. And then, you know.
Have Saturday night.
Let's get to the Super Bowl.
It's better than landing on a Tuesday.
But I do think the day of, you probably want to do something, you know, as
really?
A couple. Yeah, something. Maybe it's not going out. Maybe you stay in and pull a Russell Wilson, you know, and just get your announce to the world you got a deal. Hey, Seattle, we got a deal. Land next to your wife. Maybe that's all you need to do on Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. And then you get to the Super Bowl part. You know?
I just thought the reaction from my boy that it was on Valentine's Day and he was so disappointed.
Is he in a relationship?
Married.
Okay, he's married. So he...
Hey, Seattle, we got a deal.
Yeah, you know? That's how you start Valentine's Day. That's how
I was surprised that he was so, like, taken by it.
You're tired, Russ?
See y'all in the morning.
See how tired he is in that clip? That's how you start
Probably
your Valentine's
is the morning.
Day. Gotta put in work, you know?
Yeah. So anyway, I was like, okay. I mean, probably poll worthy from the poll master.
Okay.
Like, I don't know how you would craft it. Dear NFL fan, like,
is it because maybe in his mind, I'm a husband. I have duties that day. I have to be there for my wife. This can't all be about the Super Bowl, and I want it to all be about the Super Bowl. Maybe that's part of it. I don't know. I would love to ask him these questions.
I think it's more of, we always go out on Valentine's Day, and if the Super Bowl's going on, I'm not going to want to be out at dinner.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. He's torn.
But you go Saturday night.
If your lady's on board with that. What if she's like, I want it to be on the day?
On that day.
On Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. You celebrating Thanksgiving the day before? No, we got to have Thanksgiving that day.
I don't know what comparison
I'm not
make.
In a relationship, so this is your problem. You and Cole's problem. You guys are gonna have to figure this out.
It's the Super Bowl.
What are you guys gonna do is the
question.
It's
an American holiday. Valentine's Day can't infringe upon the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl wins that match every time. Cage match, put him in.
In your mind.
Valentine's Day versus the Super Bowl,
it's a blowout. In your mind, yes. What about the minds of the partners that are out there?
Saturday night.
Well, they may not want to do that.
I'll tell you what, spill it into Sunday morning, and then you get credit.
It's going to be a lot of people watching the game at dinner
on Valentine's Day. Pull a Russell Wilson and get it into the early morning on Sunday, and then you get some credit.
How about this? We plan a dinner where you know there are going to be TVs.
Okay, that's
worse. And you get the best of both
worlds. I gave him some bad advice.
Well, that was meeting the mom for the first time. If you're in a relationship for some years, we're at this point, you know what time it is.
There's an old phrase, you can't win for losing. Do not try to... I've done that.
We both win. Everybody wins. That's what I'm doing.
You go into a place and start eyeballing where the TVs are on Valentine's Day, then you're really cutting your own knees out.
Okay, neither one cheats.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, neither one of you guys have answered my question, though. What are you guys
Saturday
going to
night.
Do?
Saturday night.
Have you ran this by Jamie?
Super Bowl is Super Bowl.
Have you ran this by Jamie? You're adamant that it's Saturday night. You're saying you haven't talked to everybody.
It all falls on the guy anyway. So, you know, don't both people get to find what they want to do?
You would think, but that's no longer our day.
All right. Well, either way, I didn't think it was like that big of a deal when he said, "Hey, can you believe that?" Yeah, I can believe.
I actually think it's a pretty big deal. I'm with him. I think this is going to be a tough day.
TLC, there's got to be a poll that you can craft. I don't know what it is yet. We'll all talk it through about whether it's a problem or is it a good thing, bad thing. Would you just celebrate Saturday night and then you're all good? Like, there's got to be some way. Because my mind went to, this is perfect if Valentine's Day is on a Sunday because everyone's going to go out Saturday anyway. And I'm telling you that I know for a fact. I bet if you polled the restaurants in Central Ohio and said Valentine's Day is on Sunday, do you think you'll do more reservations Saturday night for it or Sunday?
I think they would say
Saturday.
I think you're baking in a lot of these partners that care about the Super Bowl, which I don't know if that's the case. Like, I know a few of my friends where their wives and girlfriends don't care about sports at all.
So you're going to say a lot of relationships are going to be tested this time around.
Yes. That day.
Yeah, I mean,
all right. We'll get to it today. We've got our guy Pete Futek, college football news coming up 12:30. Coming up next, we'll get into the rivalry. Kyle Whittingham took to the podium. How much does he know? How much was he willing to care? How much was he willing to lean into the game? You'll hear it next. Rothman.
Buckeye Replay this summer takes you back to some of the greatest comebacks in Ohio State football history.
Scott McMullen leads the Buckeyes past Penn State in a 2003 classic.
Hear Buckeye Replay this Saturday at 1 p.m. on The Fan.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Partly sunny skies for us today. It's filtered cloud cover works in from the west. Highs reach the mid to upper 80s. Overnight, increasing clouds, lows in the upper 60s. We'll top out pretty close to 80 on Saturday. More clouds and sunshine. Spotty showers and thunderstorms, especially as the day goes on. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Bo Bishop is a media legend. We have no idea where the other guys came from. Bishop and Friends.
Weekdays from 9 to noon.
The Fan. Finding the sweet spot
between the over
and the under.
You're listening to Rothman and Ice.
Does it count in your mind that Whittingham has played against the Bucs as a head coach and the Utes and all that? Does that count?
No.
It only counts if he's on the Michigan sideline?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
He has an experience. I mean, he knows what it's like to play a really good team and play him really tough and
compete
and all that.
This is completely different. The energy just that surrounds that game. It's historical stuff. So, yeah, a couple games against Ohio State with him coming out of the tunnel as Utah's captain of the ship. That's not hitting the same.
So he's a California guy. He's been out west forever. There's really no connection, you would say, to the rivalry. He's seen it. He's been around for so long.
A stretch of a connection would be because he's
urban.
Yes.
Yeah. But
that's,
I mean, just
guy.
The fact that
that's a stretch, though.
The fact that he's been around college football as a player and then a coach since the late 70s. Like, he knows the rivalry. Like, he's seen it from afar. And now he's in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's fair to expect him to have any other comments than what he had in Chicago. I think he did it pretty smart. I don't think he manufactured anything. I think he was himself. I think there'd be a temptation to say something, to have a feel that he really doesn't know, but he anticipates. Like, and when I heard him talk about Ohio State, it was kind of what we're not used to it. It's kind of a watered down version of the rivalry. And we've seen guys take jobs where they've thrown down the gauntlet, where you've had, you know, even Tress, as soft spoken as he is, with the 310 days, and you'll be proud of a young in the classroom, yeah, and especially in Ann Arbor. Like, even he mm-hmm. took the opportunity, mm-hmm. and now he was an Ohio guy, so he grew up with it. And so maybe there was a little more yeah. ingrained in him. And I'm happy that Whittingham didn't fake it. I think he could have faked it. I think he could have. And in some way, he could have said more than he did. And I'm okay with it. When you hear it, maybe you'll think it's just kind of a soft serve. But TLC, serve this up for us. The Kyle Whittingham at the Big Ten meetings when approached about the rivalry.
I don't know what that dynamic was. I know it. I thought Ryan was a pretty good guy when I met with him, or not met with him, but interacted with him in the Rose Bowl. And based on what, again, Urban has told me about it, I just think that a rivalry can be intense and emotional without the hatred factor. I don't think there's any place for that personally. I think Ryan Day's a good person. And to sit here and say, I hate Ryan Day, I'd be making crap up, because that's not true.
Do we have any We Are the World audio in here where we're all holding hands and swaying back and forth?
So you're on the side that he went way too kumbayana. Like, he went way too the other way. Like, almost doubling down on how Ryan Day's a great guy and I don't think there should be hatred. It should be intense, but not hatred.
He found it.
He's not a big fan of pregame fights, the tunnel.
On
Marcus Hall, the double birds.
Which is, I thought,
like,
great.
I don't think he's.
So on one end, you could have a coach come in like Cignetti, right? Like, that's the top of the calling out Ohio State, calling out Michigan, doing all that. You can have a coach come in and try to fake it like Brian Kelly with the accent and ingratiate himself into the fan base that way. Or you have a head coach that's true to himself. It's kind of boring. Like a Kyle Whittingham that doesn't want to play the game. This song's amazing. Doesn't want to play the game. And so for Kyle Whittingham, he is being true to himself, which I kind of respect. Yeah. But I do think you now, though, as a head coach of the Michigan Wolverines, you got to play the game a little bit. A little bit. Yeah. And I thought he missed an opportunity there to really show the Michigan fan base in his mind that he does have a little distaste in his mouth for Ohio State. That's all.
God, my era was so
Kyle Whittingham,
great.
Let's all grab hands.
It was so great. The philanthropic efforts of the 80s are unmatched.
How did this come together?
Band-Aid, Live Aid, USA for Africa, Farm Aid. We did it all.
I don't know if there's anything
we
that's
are the
happened
world.
Since that.
That's what I'm telling you.
Or will ever happen,
dude,
since that. That will top that amount of celebrity in one room.
The Do They Know It's Christmas was pretty strong as well.
I said that, and Michael Rubin's All White Parties popped into my mind right away. I think that's competing with this.
Yeah.
But when you go back and see some of the old footage of all these folks in the studio,
so good.
Incredible, man.
I remember Big Ten social media ran something a couple of years ago at Big Ten Media Day where they had each coach. And they said, like, name something you like about your rival.
Right.
And, like, everybody, like, found something. Like, oh, they got cool colors, or they got, like, a good band or something like that. Ryan Day was the only one who didn't budge. He said, nope, I won't say anything good about Michigan.
That's all you got to do.
Now, let's not make him the complete, you know, that's what friends are for kind of.
No. But I think what TLC brought up, your example of what Tress brought up, just the little needle. nothing disrespectful, but you can't be the, you know, there's no hatred, you know, we're just here to play football. And
you dropped the intense word.
Hope nobody gets hurt.
I can't say Ryan Day is not a good guy because he is.
Yeah, we're going to shake hands after the game.
I sent you another clip. I don't know if you can play it on the fly.
I can.
This, I think, puts it more into context because I want to be fair to him. Like, that was in a little bit of a scrum. That wasn't at the podium. Like, I think people were trying to find out what his relationship was. I'm glad he didn't fake it, and I'm glad he told the truth. Doesn't mean he doesn't want to win. You don't have to be the yeller and the screamer and the crazy guy to care. But I think this may encapsulate it a little better.
It's the game, as we call it, and it's of great importance, obviously, to both sides. But I'm an old school coach. You know, we got 11 games that we play before that, so we're not going to get ahead of ourselves. But make no mistake, I understand the implications that it has. Friend of mine, Urban Meyer. You know, he was at the other place for a few years, and we'd talk about the game during the, you know, over the course of that time span. And so, very well versed in what it means, the intensity of it, the national allure that it has, and our players are the same. I mean, everybody knows that game's looming out there, and I think the best case scenario, it comes down to that 12th game, and that's for all the marbles in the Big Ten. I think that would be ideal, and so hopefully that happens.
All right. Not going to say it's not boring, but I'm going to tell you I think it's his truth, and I think it's real. The other thing I liked about it is, and I don't know if this will stick, but I'll be the first to say it. I don't know if he'll always be calling Ohio State the other place. That other place.
That state.
I just heard the other place. And so he didn't say it. Does he get any points for that?
Sure.
Okay. We got to give him a half a point for the other place.
Am I being super picky? Like the way that he even like said this at the very beginning.
It's the game, as we call it.
As we call it. At least he didn't say they call it.
True.
He's part of it now.
But he did kind of sound like he's, and I'm being super picky here. He did kind of sound like he just learned it. He's like, apparently we call it the game. Like,
yeah. No, I agree with you.
He's like, the game, we call it.
He's kind of on the,
we're from LA.
He's rebuilding a culture. He's inherited a quarterback.
This
like,
was.
He's just falling into it. And to expect him to just fall all over himself that it's a one game season.
Yeah.
And that means more than anything. And I haven't been in it, but I know about it. I've watched it for 40 years. Like, I think that would be disingenuous.
This is a slight miss on his part. Just a slight miss. That's all. I do think, though, the timing of the hiring for them, this is the guy that they needed. They needed a grown up in the room. They needed this type of boring guy to get the football operations in order. That's not going to have any distractions attached to it. That's not who Kyle Whittingham is. And so as far as the football stuff goes, I think they're going to have a structured team that's going to have a similar vibe to what we've seen from Michigan. Tough, run the ball, all of these things that Utah brought to the table, that's going to come to the table as well. I just wonder how Michigan alum feel about this type of statement. Because I can't imagine this is going over very well in Ann Arbor today. Can't imagine.
I don't think it's not going over. It's not anything they can sink their teeth into. But I think they're okay with flying under the radar hair now. They've been beaten by him.
What would you be saying if Ryan Day said this when he first got here?
Well, he was already here.
But I'm saying,
I don't know if it's a good comparison. If you said if Ryan Day was,
any new coach takes over.
If it was the exact...
Any new coach just takes over. What will we be saying today?
Lukewarm.
Yeah. And fans, I don't think Buckeye fans would be happy at all that the head coach is kind of not downplaying it, but underselling it.
You know what? I was there when Tress said what he said, and nobody expected him to say it.
Yeah.
That was the beauty of it, is that he didn't come in with a, I can't wait to hear what he has to say about Michigan. I'm telling you, he was as buttoned up as Whittingham was. Yeah. He just had maybe a better articulation about it.
Our guy Joshua Perry weighs in. There's a Netflix doc on We Are the World and how it came together. So I'm going to watch that tonight, actually.
Why don't you watch all of the 80s philanthropic stuff that we did? Everything. I think you guys ought to both get into it. I'm taking credit for this.
Send me some suggestions.
Get all your musicians together and try to make a single to change the world.
They made a second one in 2011 for Haiti. With a bunch of modern artists.
That did happen.
Yeah.
We need that lineup after.
And somehow the most famous person who didn't make that one was Taylor Swift.
Why not?
some people out there that don't think she's a very good singer. I'm not saying that, so Swifties don't come after me. But, you know, some people that think that she's talented, but she's
Maddie,
not, you know, cream of the crop.
I think, like anything, it's a results-based business.
She's getting a
and
ton
all
of
she
results.
Can say is scoreboard.
dollar bill, yo. That's right.
We'll come back. Hey, guess who was talking yesterday? Kurt Cignetti. We'll get to him, but we got Pete Futek on deck in 2 minutes from College Football News. We'll get his wrap-up of the meetings next. Rothman.
Rothman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door Showroom on Gemini Parkway. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Truth of the matter is, you're listening to Rothman and Ice on 97.1 The Fan.
All right, back at it. College football's in the air. Our friend Pete Futek, the one and only from collegefootballnews.com. He is the publisher, and he's always available when we call. He's on the Bryan Heating Cooling Systems Fangest Hotline. My man, how you feeling? Big Ten football meetings. Did you come away with any more clarity on playoff expansion at all?
Yeah, I think everyone wants it. were you guys here for any of this? Did you enter our great city for any of this over the last
No, no, we would have asked you to sleep on your couch if we did, Pete. You got any room
for
us?
Yeah, well, that's what I was waiting for. I was waiting for the holiday. Actually, no, this is the weekend I didn't because I was invaded by hordes of people wanting to do Lollapalooza. So this has been it was a weird time downtown. And the general feeling to your direct question is like every single coach, especially, you know, the PJ Flex of the world, the coaches of the, you know, the programs that aren't going to win the Big Ten championship unless something miraculous happens. Yeah, they all want it because if you're a Minnesota or an Iowa or a Northwestern, the hope is that you get to 10-2 and can get a big 10-2 Big Ten team will get into an expanded college football playoff. A 9-3 one, now you're really cooking. Now you've got if there's a 24 team playoff, now they're really in. And so I think they like the idea of it. So at the very least, for all the negatives that everyone wants to put about around an expanded college football playoff, and I do think this is the right number where we're at right now. I think it's pretty good. I don't think it needs to be expanded. But the one positive about it expanding further is it just makes a lot of fan bases into it just that much more.
What did you think of Kyle Whittingham's thoughts on the rivalry when he came out, Pete, and said that he doesn't really want to have the word hatred attached to it, at least from his end right now? What was your reaction to hearing Whittingham say that?
Whatever. You know, look, he's got a job to do beyond Ohio State. And I always get yelled at whenever I, you know, come talk to you guys or whatever, that, like, I know the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry, it is the best rivalry in sports. It's better than, you know, Auburn, Alabama. It's better than Yankees, Red Sox. It's the best rivalry going. However, as we've seen over the last several years, and I've been screaming this, of course it takes on a life of its own. Of course everyone wants to win that game. But if you don't, look, you know, Ohio State didn't win it 2 years ago. Turned out to be the best thing for them. It kind of galvanized the team, gave them another, you know, edgier attitude, and they won the national championship. They won it last year and lost the next two, haven't won a game since. So, like, it's big, but if you're Whittingham, you've got to get this thing together now. Ohio State, yeah, that's of course you want to win that game. You got to beat Oklahoma, because if you don't, you're not winning. You know, you're not going, you know, just with two losses the rest of the way. You can't chalk that up as a loss. You've got to beat Oklahoma, and that's coming up pretty quick on the schedule here.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that it would have been just disingenuous for him to add drama to it where he really hasn't lived it yet. He doesn't really, yeah, he played him with Utah, Ohio State, but it's not the same. And he's got, I agree with you, they may not even be over the end of the scandal stuff yet. I mean, maybe they got more coming down the way. I don't know, but he's going to have a new AD. He inherited a quarterback. He's got a fairly tough schedule, as you say. For him to say something out of school and add drama to something that already really doesn't need it, Ohio State, Michigan, I think it would have been counter to what he's about. But you think he's a good hire, right? They almost rescued this thing. I think most people believe to get him off the heels of what was going on was a very good hire.
I guess. Look, I get it from like exactly what you framed it, which is that from a standpoint of needing to just get a guy to kind of settle things up, do a reset, get a coach who above reproach because, you know, in the last two coaching hires, even, you know, have been plagued by scandal in various, you know, forms and shapes. You know, some didn't really matter in the whole scheme of things. One of them's uglier than the other. And so, but you wanted to reset this thing, and Whittingham's the guy to do that. The problem, though, is I think I might get him wrong by a year or so, and I'm not going to age, you know, be ageist here, but, like, I think he's turning 63 this year. I might even be low
66.
On that by a few years. 66. That's yeah. Even low. He's a young 66. I mean, the guy could, you know, beat me up with one finger, so it's like, whatever. But, like, you don't, if you're Kyle Whittingham, you don't have a five-year plan here. And they didn't really crush the transfer portal enough to be appreciably better than what they were talent-wise. His job was to keep the guys around. So he had a full-time job just to make sure Bryce Underwood was still going to be their quarterback and to get a few other pieces here and there. But like you kind of alluded to, like, yeah, of course he wants to be at Ohio State, but they're not better than Ohio State. And if you're Whittingham and you come in guns blazing and say, we're going to beat the Buckeyes, mm-hmm. Well, you might not. And at the end of the day, it might not necessarily matter to your overall goal, which is getting 10-2, and get to the college football playoff, because they weren't that terribly far off last year when things were obviously kind of a mess. And so, again, it should be really more about Oklahoma, and then you can start talking about, you know, what happens next after that. Because the other part of the Ohio State equation is, yeah, you want to beat Ohio State because, oh, we want to win the Big Ten championship. Well, as we've seen from that, too, that doesn't really matter quite as much anymore, which ties all into your original question about the college football playoff expansion.
So, Pete, you were roaming around the last few days up there in Chicago at Big Ten Media Days. After hearing players and coaches speak over the last 3 days, has your opinion changed on anyone, maybe in a positive way or in a negative way, after some of the chatter that's been going on?
I'm a jaded veteran of this stuff like you are, but you can't come away from this stuff without always kind of buying whatever coaches are selling. Because if you're a college football head coach in the Big Ten, you don't get there without being a brilliant salesman. I mean, that's the job, because you got to sell the alumni, you got to sell the 17-year-old kids, you got to sell the new recruits and all the new transfers. You got to do sell, and you got to be really good at this. You got to be like a used car salesman up there. And so it's kind of hard not to hear these guys and be ready to go. Like just listen to PJ Fleck, who went on twice as long as anybody else at his own thing. And just, you're ready to go. Like, this guy's, you kind of believe that he's got something figured out. You got something, you know, you're Pat Fitzgerald. He seems he's got something figured out. Barry Odom, you know, Bob Chesney. I mean, all these guys who have were in the great suits, who are at that thing, are able to sell it fine. And then, as always, like, Michigan is a little bit different because, you know, they do realize their place in the world. They are a powerhouse, but they are, you know, a couple years removed from the national championship, and things are a little different. Oregon had a little more of a, yeah, we still haven't quite done it yet edge. And then, as always, you know, Ohio State, you know, it's so funny now, and then, again, I don't know if you've seen this, it just seems like, okay, they did win the national championship, and they were still probably the best team. You know, if you redid last year, they could have won the national championship, but they're going to be the number one team in the country this year. It just seems like they're more at ease. There doesn't seem to be quite as much, you know, edginess and grouchiness as there was like 3 or 4 years ago. And because now Ryan Day's settled in, he's a made man, and, you know, that's a good thing. And now let's see if they can find that fire and fight that they had a couple years ago where they want to win the national championship again, and it's an existential problem for them.
Pete, I'll tell you what else did it for me. There was a little bit of a collective flex for the conference that they're not used to. The fact that they racked up 3 in a row and they got a turkey going here for the national title, I think there was a feeling that they could back each other a little bit. There's always that individual stuff. Your team, you want them to be great. You want to beat that team. We got rivalries in the conference. But it turned into this week a little bit of, hey, if the SEC wants to tout that they've got a better depth, let them do it, because we've got the last three champs. I think this is something we haven't experienced in a long, long time, if not ever, that the Big Ten came in there with a feeling of a little more cohesiveness as a conference.
What tipped you off? Was it the three national championship trophies up by the right next to each coach talking, so it's always in the frame of every single shot? Yeah, did you hear Brett Bielema at all? You want to talk about the guy? He is awesome. I mean, first of all, he's always a fun character to begin with. I've always liked him. But he loves poking that SEC bear. And, you know, he had his time in Arkansas, and, you know, he basically wrecked the South Carolina franchise by getting in their head in that bowl game with his substitutions that just melted Shane Beamer's brain. And so no one loves beating SEC teams more than Brett Bielema. And you're right. There is kind of that, you know, rising tide raises all boats sort of thing where it's like, the Big Ten's the biggest conference going. It is. I was screaming this for years that wait until Alabama figures out that Purdue's making more money in its media deal. Like, they just have more money. They have it's a bigger conference. It's coast to coast. They have all the media markets. It is a bigger, more important conference. It is bigger than the SEC. And the SEC media days is really, you know, the Kevin Bacon Animal House meme. Stay calm, all is well. Look at us. We're great. We have a tough schedule. Well, yeah, okay, but you haven't done anything. I think the stat has been over the last three college football playoffs, the SEC is, I think, 2-7 against other Power Four programs, and both wins came from Texas. You know, so it's not like they've been crushing it at a high level. Now, it only takes one. All you need is, like, Georgia. You know, Georgia's been insanely close. You know, all they need to do is have a couple good games and, you know, late December and January, and all of a sudden the SEC is great again. But you're right. It's from top to bottom. Even the, you know, the Purdues of the world, you know, the Rutgers of the world, they still feel they're in the club. You know, they got past the bouncer. They're in the VIP lounge here. And you're right. It is one collective flex in Chicago over the last 3 days. It's always interesting. But then you can bring everyone down by as soon as Cignetti gets all, you know, high and mighty. You'd be like, hey, right. 150 kids across the street who have no clue who you are, dude. So, like, it was an interesting time the last 3 days.
No doubt. Good stuff, man. Great wrap-up for us. Have a good weekend, bud. Thanks for jumping on.
Anytime, guys. Have a good one.
You too. Pete Futek, College Football News, the publisher. He was on the Bryant Heating Cooling Systems Fangest Hotline. Overs and unders. Into the weekend. Play along next. Roth Trust.
Retirement from football hits everyone differently. For Devere Posey and Dane Sanzenbacher, it means sitting around watching sports clips on the internet and arguing about them. Search for Didn't Catch That on YouTube and subscribe.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Patriot Air Comfort Systems and Bryant.
Doing whatever it takes to keep your home comfortable. The Fan.
Rothman and Ice presents Overs and Unders.
Sponsored by the Roofing Guys. For all your roofing, siding, and gutter needs, contact the Roofing Guys at theroofingguys.com.
All right, TLC, what you got?
All righty, so MLB trade deadline is coming up. One of the biggest names is Tarek Skubal. He is the back-to-back reigning Cy Young winner in the American League from Detroit. So a lot of speculation about where he's going to go. He's the main guy in the hot stove. And so there's obviously, because this is what the Dodgers do, there's a lot of speculation that the Dodgers could come in and scoop him up because they apparently need a lot of help winning back-to-back World Series.
Well, they don't know when Shohei's going to pitch again. And so that's what they're thinking.
Some questions, too, about
Snell and now,
yep,
yeah.
Yep.
Yamamoto and every other all-star pitcher that they have. But that's okay. So Evan Cohen, who I believe was on this show at Radio Row in recent years. He was on First Take yesterday talking about how if Tarek Skubal goes to the Dodgers, who are already loaded, that would be good for baseball.
This is great. We all have an opinion on this team. You need heroes and villains. There's a reason the WWE is so big. Face, okay? And the heel, the good person, bad person. The Dodgers provide that for us. If we don't have that in sports, that's a problem. And we have that with the Dodgers. So I'm a Mets fan. My team stinks. But if he goes to the Dodgers, I'm all in on that because guess what it does? It gets us to sit here and debate this. If he goes to the Rays...
That we like greatness or not?
Okay, so if he gets traded to the Rays...
That's the worst thing for the Yankees.
We're going to talk about this. If he gets traded to the Rays, it's going to be a hot topic. At least if he goes to the Dodgers, it becomes... By him going to the Dodgers, you mentioned Alabama, which everyone has an opinion on, the Yankees, LeBron, the Patriots, you're mentioning people that teams that everyone has an opinion on. This is actually a good thing for baseball if he goes to the
Until it's not, if it ends up being a sticking point for the MLB owners when it comes to negotiations with the CBA.
So my question is, how many World Series will the Dodgers win during Shohei Ohtani's 10-year contract? Because they're already 2-for-2, so I'm setting the over-under at 4.5.
It's very difficult because if they were to get Skubal, I would give them, I don't know what their odds are now, what the implied odds are now of them winning without him, but it's to the point where I would have to give them probably a 60 to 70% chance on winning it again. Over under 4.5. I don't know, man. Baseball's tough. Pitching rules everything. So if they get him
right now without
they go
him.
Half
right yeah. now without him, AR plus 175 to win the World Series. Second in line is the New York Yankees at plus 550.
Okay, so plus 175 implies that they this is going to be less than what people think. I think it implies they have like maybe a under 40% chance to win it all. So they're the favorite, but that's what I'm telling you. If they get Skubal, they probably go to 50%. And so you're still flipping a coin in a way on whether they actually win it all. But with a series, the better teams, the better rotations, they all, it's not football where you can upset somebody. Yeah. Like, it's very difficult to win 4 or 7. I'm hesitating because I don't know if I want to get to 5. Like, for them to win half
I feel
in
pretty,
his career?
I feel pretty strong about if they get him this year, they're going to win it.
Yeah.
I'm going to take the under, though, on the number TLC laid out for us because of the aging superstars and Freddie Freeman yeah. and Mookie Betts. And what is that going to look like 4 and 5 years down the road? We know what Shohei is. Even if he just transitions into a hitter only, he's going to be an MVP candidate. So that's not going to go anywhere. But the guys that are heavy hitters, Max Muncy, Freddie Freeman, Mookie Betts, these guys aren't young. And so I'm going to take the under on 4.5.
They get Skubal, they'll win it.
This year.
Yes.
I agree.
And I don't think they believe they have to get him to win it.
I think
that's the scary part.
I think they're making this move because they are a little spooked by Glasnow and Snell and not knowing. And they brought in Roki Sasaki last year, who was okay. Yamamoto's a dude for them. After that, it's a little, little dicey. And so I can't knock them. They've got an amazing farm system. They've got all this money to throw around. Like, if you were in the position running the team, you'd probably be trying to get Skubal too. Yeah. So I can't be mad.
They're fortunate that Páez is having the year he's having yeah. versus the year that Tucker's having.
Yes. Like,
yeah. So yep. they've offset that. And they just got Diaz back to be their closer. And he's pitched 2 days in a row now. So
it's just wild that yeah. they can continue to throw yeah. all these resources at their team. You mentioned Diaz the year before that. Who'd they sign? What was perceived as one of the best closers in the world in Tanner Scott. That didn't work. Doesn't matter. We got all this money. Let's go get Edwin Diaz. And that's a lot of the frustration for people is rooted in that. It's just like, what are we doing with the sport when this team can just go out and make all these moves whenever they want?
How far will the 76ers make it into the NBA playoffs next year over under 2.5 rounds?
So either they get to the ECF or not?
Correct.
I'm going to go under because it's year one. If this were year two, I would definitely go over. But I'm going to go under because it's year one.
They're better than... So let's think about this. Cleveland, the Knicks, I think they're better than the Celts. And Detroit is there too. So
don't sleep on Indiana too with Halley coming back. Tyrese Halliburton coming back. That's a sneaky team in the East. That was just in the finals a couple years ago.
Yeah, they had a year, huh?
Yeah, man. So I just I'm very curious how they're gonna get the chemistry in year one with all these alphas, all these guys that just are on the ball so much. That takes time, and I think a lot of time to figure out. Because this isn't three guys, this is 4 to 5 guys that have to figure this out.
Boy, it's right there. It's right on the line. I'm going to say they get to the Eastern Conference Final. Okay. Somehow they piece it together. I think they know how short time LeBron has, and I think I'm going to look at the odds right now to win the conference. Right now to win the conference, they're the second betting favorite.
Behind the Knicks?
Yeah. Okay. So it's the Knicks, the Sixers, then the Celts, then the Raptors, then the Pistons, then the Cavs.
Yeah, and we'll see if that Kawhi yeah. Leonard deal even goes through, which is crazy. Yeah. Now that's hovering over their head up there. But yeah, we saw what they could bring to the table in that yeah. series against the Cavs. So you add Kawhi to that, they're going to be a problem.
We come back, top of the hour, sports update, and the Brownies had a celebrity visitor. What was it all about? We'll tell you next. Roth
Better.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good afternoon. I'm Tyler Danberg. After being arrested for OWI last week, CBS NFL analyst Tony Romo is placed on leave until further notice. J.J. Watt will work with Jim Nantz and Tracy Wolfson for now. Less than 9 months after ACL surgery, Packers tight end Tucker Kraft was activated off the PUP list today. He's expected to be eased back into practice. Soccer, per reports, Crew and Team USA defender Max Arfston are finalizing a deal with English side Middlesbrough. He's the third American to join the club, along with former Crew midfielder Aiden Morris and former Crew Academy midfielder Sebastian Berhalter. Baseball, Reds host the Pirates at 6:10. Guardians host the Diamondbacks at 7:10. Clippers host Toledo from Huntington Park at 7:05. On the PGA Tour, final Rocket Classic from Detroit, Cam Young and Patrick Cantlay share the lead at 10-under in round two. Breaking sports news when it happens right here on The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Like Yoda, Rothman will limp onto the golf course. Talk about how stiff his back is.
Wonder how he can even make it through a hole.
And then proceed to kick your ass. You're listening to Rothman and Ice.
All right, second hour of the program. Pressure cooker coming your way. We got Mike Tenier of the Two Deep Zone talking NFL training camps. We'll have that going. I see that Deshaun Watson is going with the ones. Randy Watson.
Randy Watson.
Pads on Monday. Here we go.
Let's get it.
So that will be special.
Seems like it's a little bit of a mixed bag from the quarterback so far, which is, I think, kind of expected. First few practices, a lot of stuff going on, but doesn't sound like anybody's really been consistent all the time, crushing it and doing everything that they need to be doing. But I think that's understandable and reasonable for any player in any team right now.
I'm watching some video from Browns camp, the shorts, no pads, helmets, and Deshaun Watson kind of laid one out deep, and it was an easy pick. And I don't know who that was. They just kind of knocked it to the ground. It's just kind of laissez-faire. And I saw a tweet that said, was the defense told not to intercept Deshaun Watson? They had already intercepted him twice and had another easy one that the defender just lets Judy kind of waltz through for it. I didn't know. Who knows? I guess he threw picks on back-to-back plays, so
that's tough. It's always, like, I try to remind myself, AR, to not go crazy either way with this, because we sometimes the coach is like, hey, we're going to run the same play three times in a row to try to work on this and all that. And we don't know those details, but that's obviously not the return and the results that you want if you're a guy that is in the middle of what I think is a pretty real quarterback competition.
Yeah, that's right. Rolling left, throwing against your body, Denzel Ward coming across, throw it out of bounds. Now, maybe in practice, it's like, hey, I'm going to give my guy a chance to make a play. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. I don't know how these NFL guys, I don't know how these quarterbacks really think about that. Like, how perfect do you want to be in practice? Or it's called practice for a reason.
Yes. I've heard some of that. You've heard some of that. Quarterbacks want to push themselves in practice. Hey, can I get it in that window? Can I throw it over this linebacker into that spot? Like, test drive this thing. I may not do this in a game, but I'm going to do it now in practice.
Here's the other version of it, Matty.
Yeah.
Why not also look at it from the other point of view, which is, let's see how my receiver does on a 50-50 ball.
I think it's a good point. Can I trust him?
We're just like, let's give him a shot at it.
No, I think that's a great thing that you bring up, because
it's all on the quarterback.
You're the quarterback and I'm a receiver in practice, and you've, let's say, repped with me for 2 weeks 50-50 balls, and I'm not coming down with a high percentage of those. Guess what you're probably not going to do in the game? Trust me to make that catch. And so I think you have to figure those things out in practice, not only the quarterback, but the coaches as well.
First of all, the fact that he's getting first team reps today, and he's alternating practices with Shadur. And Monken said that, this kind of proves my point. It says here, Todd Monken said today's practice reps focus on third and extra long.
So the quarterback's
three-level routes, right. No huddle.
So you're up against it. And guess what? The defense knows that. That means you're pushing the ball downfield, probably into some clunky windows, and guys are going to get their hands on footballs and intercept them. And so that's why I don't think anybody should get carried away with what we see in training camp. Even though it's fun to react to this stuff. I get it.
The Browns opened up the welcome mat, or throughout the welcome mat, to a legendary player named Deion Sanders. and they welcome him.
I don't give a damn about the Browns. I do love me some Shedeur Sanders.
And that's exactly what happened. That's exactly what's going on.
Roaming the sidelines yesterday, sunglasses, cowboy hat, chains on. It was good to see Prime up there. It was good to see him up there, man. The health stuff seems to be in order. I know that's always been kind of a thing hovering over his head in a bad way, but it does sound like his health is in order, which is always great. But yeah, Pops was on the grounds yesterday. Came to see how his son was doing.
Kind of know how it started with Monken mentioning to Shedeur how badly he wanted him in Baltimore and how... They've kind of reunited.
Yeah.
And nobody really knows. Monken welcomed Shedeur into his office. Told him how much he liked him. Says that was no coincidence after so many silly conspiracy theories about sabotage emerged last season. All right. So now the Browns are taking this step to welcome his dad to the practice with all smiles. Let's hear... Is this the soundbite from the Rainforest Cafe?
Live from the Amazon Rainforest, right. Here is what he learned about Shedeur from Dion.
Being around Shedeur, in terms of how he processes personality-wise, and I think, competitive-wise, he got into it at the end, in terms of what makes him tick that he's been around, which was good. It was all good. But we've seen that. Most of what he said... We've been able to see. Now, we haven't gotten to games yet. That's a lot different animal. But at this point, what he talked about, I would have said, no, that's how I've seen it.
I'm curious about how the invitation was initiated.
Well, remember, Dion said to them...
He did say he wanted to get up there.
He wanted to be up there. Yeah. So I'm sure he called Barry.
Yeah, and said, hey, do you mind?
Yeah, or told him.
Yeah, do you mind if I come up?
What day's best?
Yeah, and we see celebrities.
Let me tell you how to coach my son.
Well, Shedeur told him to stay away, remember, for a while. Shedeur was like, hey, last year, because he wanted to be in a better situation before Daddy showed up.
Yeah. And Todd Monken strikes me as a guy that respects Dion and probably values some of his opinion, but he's not going to... take everything that Dion said and say, okay, this is the way I'm going to operate now just because he said so. I do think, though, that there's value in talking to him because, yes, he's his dad, but he was also his coach. And so I think there are some things that Monken can maybe get from Dion and 100%. Say, hey, this is what we worked on in practice. This is what worked in games and all that. So I actually think it is pretty valuable for both of those guys to get not on the same page, but just toss some information back across the net to each other, and Monken can do what he wants with it.
I think there is some value if it goes the route of, I think this is the best way for you to tap into what's going on here with my son. This is how to connect with him. Yeah. I know him better than anybody, and this is how you're going to get the most out of him, or at least give his advice on it. Now, I mean, Dylan Gabriel's dad didn't show up, or Dan Lanning didn't show up.
That name, we don't hear it anymore. Nothing about Dylan Gabriel.
Bobby Petrino didn't drive in on a motorcycle to see Taylen Green.
Those guys aren't Dion, though.
It's Sanders. And he got his moment with Andrew Berry, and he got his moment with Monken, I guess. And the reality is his son's in a battle, and he's not going to win it because Prime knights him to do it. It's just not going to be that way. I do think there is some value. Now, if I'm Deshaun Watson... I hope this lights a fire under you even more. Hey, your competition's legendary father is here, and he's got the ear of the head coach, for whatever that means. So just kind of, you're human. I mean, it would kind of be a little odd, but it might motivate me even more.
Yeah, it would definitely be odd. I think I'd be in a situation where it's like, I don't need any external motivation right now. If I were Deshaun, right? I have so much to prove to the world, but more importantly to myself, can I still do this? That's got to be such a mental struggle for him every day, just because he has been one of the best before, and now you're in the outhouse and your production has been bad. You're coming back from tough injuries, and so that's, I think, should be your motivation if you're Deshaun. Not that Prime's here, because I don't think Todd Monken, he's not going to be too affected by that, but this is about where you at internally with where you're at right now as a player and a dude.
Yeah, I mean, if you believe what Monken said, he said they really didn't talk a lot about football. It was just, he's here to see his son. He's at a pro camp. Yeah. We talked a little college ball. the state of the state.
Yeah, this
college
is
football.
My read on this isn't some $100 handshake from Dion to Monken. Like, hey, I got a little something for you. You know, make sure my son gets in there.
Keep it fair.
I don't think that's the card that was being played by Dion yesterday. I don't.
Yeah. Well, everyone's making the assumption that neither one of these guys is going to be starting next year.
Well,
or at least have the leg up on it. I mean, that's it. It's, to me, this year is about these two guys trying to prove that the Browns don't have to go into the 27 draft and replace them.
That would be the dream. You and I are in lockstep with that when it comes to Shador. If that, you get to the finish line of this season and you feel really good about him, because I think that's what you have to feel, is really good about him to not move on to somebody else, then you're in a great, great place. There is a little runway with Deshaun after this, very small percentage on that. Much more upside and much more runway if Shador can figure this thing out. But we were talking about trust, right? Like, from the quarterbacks to their playmakers, he's got to gain the trust of Monken. Like, the film that Monken, I'm sure, studied last year was all right. He had the Tennessee game, the moment against the Raiders, but he looked like a rookie. And so the decision making, I think, in the coming days and weeks for him is how he can get the trust of Monken to have him be the guy over Deshaun.
It's probably good news for him that Deshaun's off to a slower start, because I think Deshaun was winning the offseason narrative.
Yes.
He just kind of was. There was the
Mary Kay Cabot report.
The Mary Kay Cabot report that it's his job to lose, and that he was first up with the number one offense. And if he doesn't look all world, then this is your chance to kind of step through a little bit.
This was the Mary Kay Cabot report that we were talking about, and this was on April 29th. The article she put out was how Deshaun Watson emerged from voluntary minicamp with an edge over Shador Sanders. Sources say, and has the inside track to be named quarterback one. And that was on, again, April 29th. And things have obviously changed. He didn't do enough to hold it down, that being Deshaun, and Monken opened up the door for Shador, and we'll see if he walks through.
Been a lot of years since Deshaun wowed the NFL.
A lot.
And he's got experience, and he's got some health now, which helps. And now he's got to put it on display. Yeah. And Shador is one of those guys that he's fighting the name and the hype and what he's supposed to be. And that's why I think he's kind of walking back to, I've got to prove it and go old school. It's a fun battle. I think it's more for us than the NFL right now, but there's definitely some intrigue.
Oh,
just because no matter who quarterbacks them, they're not a playoff team.
Shador's a needle mover. I saw it on ESPN this morning. They're talking about him in this quarterback race. Without him, there's not this appeal, but he no doubt can provide a lot of eyeballs or bring a lot of eyeballs to your brand, but that's only going to get you so far. It's about the execution at this point.
Yeah, he's got to be in the game. We'll come back, find out who goes into the pressure cooker next. Rothman.
Here at The Fan, we love summer as much as the next guy. Fun times at the pool, family vacations, all that crap. But as the dog days descend upon us, it only means one thing. Buckeye Football Fall Camp. Join us beginning August 6th. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Partly sunny skies for us today. It's filtered cloud cover works in from the west. Highs reach the mid to upper 80s. Overnight, increasing clouds, lows in the upper 60s. We'll top out pretty close to 80 on Saturday. More clouds and sunshine. Spotty showers and thunderstorms, especially as the day goes on. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
The radio couldn't contain us, so we've taken over YouTube. Catch Morning Juice weekday mornings at 6 by searching 971 The Fan. Do it. Rothman and Ice present Under Pressure.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Get 50% off all window styles plus no payments for 2 years. Visit windownation.com.
All right, the cooker time. Who's going in? Maddie, I'm going to do a combo platter to start.
Okay, little potato skins and mott sticks to start it off. Let's go.
Yeah.
I like it.
Poo-poo platter. I'm going to put equal pressure on the Guardians and White Sox.
Okay.
And I'll back it up with this. So, Cleveland's going after a third division title. They have the lowest OPS in Major League Baseball. Now, if you remember last year at the deadline, they were in second place in the Central. But they had a 500 record. This year, they're in second place in the AL Central. And what are they, 505?
Let me get that for you.
Here's the big difference. So their records were around the same. But here's the main difference. Last year, they were 9 games back of Detroit. And they were 3 games out of a wild card spot. This year, what are they, 2 back right now?
White Sox are up in the division. Guardians, two back.
Yeah. So last year's team had, what would you say, the greatest comeback of all time? Like,
it was amazing.
Winning the division. They trailed by 15 and a half games in early July.
Ran those boys down.
You cannot count on anything like that. And I'm not saying they're going to fall that far behind. They probably shouldn't. Yeah. But this year is so much more winnable than last year. And I expect them to add to this lineup. I think they have to. Now, on the other side, the White Sox have had a four-year playoff drought. So they're the exact opposite of the Guards. Last year, the last time they finished over 500 was 4 years ago. And they made the playoffs in 21. The White Sox have lost 324 games over the previous three seasons. And now they're in first place in the AL Central. Here's the difference. They don't need a rental. They're not that team. They're not that good. They're fun, but they're not that good. So they can't look at the trade deadline as a rental. They've got to look at the trade deadline as, can we get guys that are under team control? Because they need pitching. They have a young offense. I think you respect it. I like it. Yeah. They've hit the sixth most home runs in Major League Baseball. If they can get a little pitching, but it's got to be a guy with term. Mm-hmm. It's got to be some team control.
Yeah.
I don't think they can go into this thinking, man, if we could just win the division. So I think they've got kind of a present look and a future look. And the Guardians are trying to continue what they've already done. I think there's equal pressure. I think this race is going to be as fun as any, even though neither team will win the World Series. It's just, it's got a cool thing. I'm giving them equal pressure before the deadline.
I like this. I got a question for you. Would Garrett Crochet be good in their rotation? Would that be a good addition?
In whose?
The White Sox rotation.
I like Garrett Crochet.
They already had him, but that's the reason
I want him back.
The reason why they're here, though, is because of the trade. So it's interesting because it's like they have the offense now, but they don't have the ace anymore. But that's the give and take when you make trades like that. I still think they did well for themselves. And, yeah, we'll see if the Guard Dogs can run them down in the Central. You got something else?
No, that's my combo for baseball.
No, I like it. That's good stuff, man. First candidate for me. AR, I'm going with Mike Evans. I'm going with Mike Evans, man. I think Mike Evans is now in a real pressure-packed situation because of what's happening around him in his own wide receiver room. There are now real concerns, it sounds like, about former first-round pick in Ricky Pearsall, who we know the story, scary, scary situation, right, before his rookie season, gets shot in the chest and all that was wild, but now he's dealing with a situation where he's got knee swelling going on, and it sounds like the team is worried about his availability as we inch because we're still a ways away, but they're not sure whether or not he's going to be there week one. So now you look at what they did. The Ricky Pearsall news comes out. They make a bit of a panic move. Hey, Debo, we need you back. He signs for 1 year for $7 million, and then you look around that room, and it's Christian Kirk, who's okay. And then it's now Debo. And so you have an aging wide receiving room with Kirk, Debo, and Mike Evans. And then we don't know about Kittle and what that's going to look like coming back from the Achilles. So I just think he was obviously brought in to be a dude. But now I think that's ramped up even more. And we'll see if he's still got it. And so Brock Purdy, Mike Evans, they got to get this thing going. Mm-hmm. But Mike Evans, Gazelle, he now has more weight to lift out there in the Bay. So I'm putting him on the pressure list.
I really like this one because I don't believe... And I'm kind of, in my mind, I don't think the Niners have a top 20 wide receiver. In like fantasy, for sure. Like, I'm thinking about it from a fantasy standpoint. Am I missing? Evans wouldn't be top 20.
Probably not.
And he would be right. He'd be the guy you would draft.
Off this team. There's no question.
Maybe fringe top 25? I don't.
Yeah, no, I think that's about right, AR. So they drafted a wide receiver in the second round, Deshaun Stribling from Ole Miss. So we'll see what he can do, but this has got to be Mike Evans. He is the no doubt known commodity, so consistent year in and year out. He's got to be that dude again.
Is Stribling the guy who just broke his leg?
Did that happen? Oh, did that happen today?
That somebody else.
Oh, I may have missed that. So many injuries happening, unfortunately, that.
Maybe it was somebody else.
Okay.
I don't, I didn't hear about a fracture or anything.
Was it, you think it out, Brazel from the Panthers who went down with a knee injury?
Definitely did.
Yeah, he's done. That. Okay.
I might be making up stuff.
But if something happened to Stribling, then they're really hurt. Really hurt.
I know their coach has some injuries.
Yeah, man. Good point. He's dealing with stuff. Wow. Yeah.
All right, I'll take it to golf, and I'll go to Detroit, and I'll go to the Rocket Mortgage. And I think there's no player that's more recognizable in this tournament's history than one Ricky Fowler. So he was trending pretty solid this year. He got sick in May. It stopped his mo. And I would say it doesn't hurt that his last win on tour came at this event 3 years ago. He could have a big week. He's on one now because he's got two top 20s in his last two events, and he's won this event. Now, he was 40-1 coming in, but he shot 63 in round one. Ricky Fowler has four top 10s this year. He's kind of just very subtly been around. He hasn't sealed the deal yet, so how about a win? So let's go to the leaderboard and see what's happening with Dick Fowler, PI. He is 8 under. He is 2 back. He just started his round. Looks like he birdied number 2. And so Ricky Fowler and the Rocket Classic has kind of been synonymous. It's just his place. The only issue is he's got Cameron Young leading now. That's solid. Cantlay's up there. But he could have a day today. Okay. So I'm going to put a little pressure on Ricky. Back horses for courses. This is his place. And we'll see if he can get it done.
At the beginning there, did you hit us with a killed his mo? A killed his momentum? Did you drop that? Okay.
Yeah, I don't.
I might add that to my bag. Killed his mo. I've never heard you say that.
I don't know if I've ever said it. I didn't think it was that
I was like,
off. Yeah, I didn't know whether I was going to say momentum or not. Or mojo or
killed
whatever.
His mo.
Yeah. Killed his mo.
Second candidate for me. I think it's put up or shut up time for Michael Penix, AR. I think it's right now. He's played a combined 14 games in his NFL career, and I know Cousins started some of those, and I get all that. But last year, only nine games. And you look at the touchdown to interception ratio, it was 9-3, not bad. But Kevin Stefanski was hired, and he looked at the quarterback room and said, you know what? I don't trust it. So I'm going to go get a guy that's also got his own questions. But I think he's been kind of put on notice when that move happens. And so he was out there on the field today. I did see Tua and Penix, and those guys were working. So that was good. But I do think for a guy that was picked 8th overall just a couple years ago, that now he's really got to be as sharp as he's ever been every single day. Because when Tua's available, and he's right, it's a solid quarterback in this league. And they have the playmakers in Atlanta where I think if Tua is right, that offense has a chance to be pretty doggone good, especially with Stefanski in the run game. And we've seen what Stefanski did with Chubb here in Cleveland. Can't imagine what he can do with Bijan. But this is about Penix for me, AR. I think the pressure's on him right now.
It's weird because he's not ready yet, and he can't really do much. He can't do any full team work. Yeah, so
he's up against.
He's kind of stuck. The one good news, the good news for him is that the guys he's fighting against, he could really beat out. I mean, Tua and Cooper Rush and.
Like
whoever
you said, though, man,
have.
If this is we're still a week or two away from where we are right now and he can't, he's not full go, man, then we're talking about him being a backup and then he's got to hope that Tua either is not going to be available, plays bad, and if Tua holds it down for the entire year, then you're
here's
really
Stefanski on Penix.
Yeah.
He's working hard in all aspects of what goes into playing quarterback. Reps will be dispersed. It's like hockey, upper body, lower body. It's all part of the plan.
Do you guys remember whether or not the Tua deal's 1 year or 2 years? I think Tua can get back to free agency next year. I can't imagine they did a multi-year deal with Tua.
Well, I know that the Dolphins are paying like 50-some-odd million of it. I think it's a 1 year.
Okay, that's
and
my
it's
guess.
Cheap. It's like $1 million.
The minimum.
It's kind of like Kyler Murray's deal with the Vikes.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I think it's the same deal.
Yeah.
I think it's like the minimum for both.
Okay.
Because I think, like, if you're already getting paid as much as they are by the other team, it's like you don't need to pay them anymore.
So we could be living in a world to where Baker, Mayfield, Tua, and Deshaun Watson are all free agents.
Wow. Okay. We will come back in 2 minutes and check in with our friend Mike Tenier, the 2-deep zone. And we'll ask him the question that's been floating around, Rams versus the field. That's next. Rothman.
Rothman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door showroom on Gemini Parkway.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
The best bet on the radio. This is Rothman and Ice.
All right, he's the NFL writer, editor, founder of the 2-Deep Zone. He's our friend Mike Tenier. Football's in the air, my man. August is coming. How you feeling?
I am feeling phenomenal. There's nothing better than turning on that computer, going to the social network, and seeing all the camp chatter, all 32 teams. People are posting 7-on-7 statistics for quarterbacks. It is the most wonderful time of the year.
Let me ask you where you stand on this, because I, for the last couple months, have been saying that it's counterintuitive for the Browns to want to play Deshaun Watson. Now, I've certainly softened my stance on it, and that if they catch lightning in a bottle, he looks good and he stays healthy, it gives them an option. And every team wants an option at quarterback, a starting quarterback, a viable starting quarterback. But it would stunt a year of growth for Shadur. And then I go to my mind, like, how well would Deshaun really have to play for them to want to invest, you know, 40 plus million in him again? And it just seems off to me. But here we are, camp battle. What do you think of the whole thing?
I hate it. I hate every element of it. You're right. I have a hard time envisioning this Deshaun Watson comeback year where he has such a season that makes so much sense that the Browns say, ooh, let's extend him and let's continue with this. And let's risk all the baggage that comes with this individual. Let's be blunt about that as well. You have that on one end. You have Shadur on the other hand, who, if Shadur can't simply claim this job, then this probably isn't the best fit for him, and maybe it's time to see if he could do something elsewhere. It's almost like a no-win situation in both situations. One thing I like pointing out with Deshaun Watson, going back, his last really good season was 2020. That's so long ago that Matt Ryan was still on the Falcons. That's so long ago that Jared Goff was still on the Rams. Carson Wentz was the starting quarterback of the Eagles back then. That's how long ago you're going back with Deshaun Watson. So if you're hoping for a year like that, you're going back so far back in time, it's very unlikely. And it seems like, you're right, the Browns take a lot of risk by putting him out there and having him have this sort of mess season that stunts the growth of other guys, puts you at 7 wins, 6 wins because of your defense, whatever, and now you can't come up with an even better solution.
All right, Mike, I'm going to take the Browns quarterback competition off the board and ask you this. The most interesting AFC North storyline right now for Mike Tannier is what?
Oh, that's a tough one. You had to limit me to the AFC North. I'm going to go to Baltimore, where we are keeping an eye on Lamar Jackson's contract situation. We are keeping an eye on Jesse Minter's attempt to sort of rebuild the culture there, create something different, differentiate himself from John Harbaugh. And an interesting thing that's going on with the Ravens right now, they don't know who their center is. Tyler Lindebaum left because the Raiders, dropped a cartoon safe on his head of money. They've got Ethan Pochick there, who Browns fans are familiar with. They're like a little bit of an older guy. They've got Danny Pinter. This is a team that's got one foot in the Super Bowl with guys like Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry, and the other foot in rebuilding as they try to reshape their offensive line. And I'm curious to see what that's going to look like.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I'm not even sure. I know they have a fairly, I don't know what their receiver room is really like with Zay Flowers and behind him. I guess Bateman's the guy on paper, but they did draft Elijah Surratt from IU. But yeah, it's people are not really sure what to think about Baltimore. I'm glad you brought that up. All right, so are you a Rams versus the field guy? Are you Rams or are you the field?
A little bit of Rams versus the field, like Rams and Seahawks versus the field. If you could give me Rams or Seahawks win the Super Bowl and give me a decent number, I would just take that. But if I have the field against the Rams, I will take the field. But it's the right way to frame the question because of how good that team looks. Yeah, I think we all have one eye on all these conversations around Aaron Donald, where it really sounds like Aaron Donald's going to come back as soon as training camp ends. That's really what it sounds like. You're hearing these big stories about how Puka looks better than ever. It's hard to make a case for the Rams not winning the Super Bowl besides, well, injuries could happen, or, well, the Seahawks, the defending champions. There's no good reason to think this is not going to be a spectacular team.
Yeah, they should be very, very entertaining. What about the champs, Mike? Hit us with your thoughts on Seattle, their offseason, and what you think they're going to be capable of trying to defend the Lombardi.
Their offseason was very quiet, and quiet is usually good. They're extending their guys. They were taking care of their business in-house. They have a very strong top-to-bottom roster. In a normal set of circumstances, I'd say, well, the Seahawks remain the team to beat. After the Trent McDuffie trade for the Rams, I was like, yeah, you know what? The Seahawks are still the team to beat. You get Myles Garrett, you put him on the Rams, it's like, you got me. You got me. The Seahawks have done what a champion needs to do, but the Rams as a runners-up have done everything they need to do, and then some. So I think the Seahawks are a great team, but it's hard to pick them over the Rams heading into August.
Mike, I know you're not in the room, but who do you feel is in the right here in this Tampa versus Baker standoff?
This is one of those mutual amicable divorce situations, I think. I'm hearing these numbers that Jeremy Fowler put out. They offered 2 years at around $100 million, and Baker Mayfield, coming off a lot of injuries, wanted more money. It's like, well, that money wasn't going to be available to you. You're 31. You're coming off injuries. You sort of peaked as, a top 14 quarterback, not necessarily a top 10, certainly not a top 5. You look at that and you say, well, why didn't the Buccaneers offer him more money? Well, they shouldn't. So this might be a situation where the best thing for both sides to do is for Mayfield to play this season out. Maybe he balls out and then he holds them over a barrel. Maybe he does that and they say franchise tag. Maybe they come to terms later on. But I think right now it's a legitimate case of both sides are far apart and for pretty good reasons.
All right, let's live in fantasy world for a little bit, because here on this show, when it comes to Baker, we're in lockstep when it comes to the entertaining part of him coming back to the AFC North and maybe playing for the Pittsburgh Steelers. What
yes.
would you? Yeah. You're in.
I see it. I believe it. I think he sees it. I think his representatives see it, and it's like, hey, if you're not going to pay me here, lock me down for a couple of years here in Tampa the way I like it. I'm going to see what happens when Aaron Rodgers retires. And, yes, that would be high theater for the Steelers, for the Browns, for everybody else in that division.
Be a lot of fun. There's no doubt. Let's stay in the North and go down to Cincinnati. In your mind, the Cincinnati defense needs to get to what ranking in, let's say, points per game, yards, whatever you want to use, Mike? Where does the defense need to get for you to believe that they're a true Super Bowl contender this year?
Oh, for a true Super Bowl contender, they've got to be in the top half of the league. They've got to be the kind of defense that is going to be good in a shootout, which means sacks and turnovers. I don't want to hear about their run defense and things like that. You have to be able to get after that quarterback, because you want to be able to win games, 41-24 when it's a shootout. I don't know if they have it. I know they're breathing a little easier right now. The Shamar Stewart injury looked like a big deal. It's only going to be a medium-sized deal. They should get him back. I don't see it on paper. I'm not a big believer in the, as long as the defense is okay, Burrow and Chase and Higgins will do it for you. Offensive line there is not spectacular. You can't base things on being able to win shootouts that frequently. Cowboys always try that. If it doesn't work for them, hasn't worked for the Bengals last couple of years. Get me like a top 12 defense and get me a defense that's top 10 or better in sacks and turnovers, and then I'll believe in the Bengals.
They were dead last against the run last year, so
yeah.
It helped getting Dexter Lawrence. I think they were almost borderline top 10 in actual takeaways, which was interesting, and they still were dreadful defensively. But a lot of people like them this year. They're being maybe undervalued by a future at 20-1 to win it all. Linebacking may be an issue. The left side of the offensive line may be an issue, but, they gave up, I think, 29 points a game last year. So if they can shave some of that, we know they have an offense that can compete with anybody.
Yeah, and you hope you see the defense that you saw. It was like really the last 4 or 5 games where the defense seemed like it was taking a step forward and they were getting better results than that. Because a lot of the statistics you cite are early season, mid-season, where it was dreadful. So if they're coming around, if Dexter Lawrence, Boye Mafe, Cassius Allen, if these guys are going to make a difference, then it's definitely a possibility.
All right, Mike. Well done, my man. Got the Hall of Fame game next week, and then it's on. So we'll talk to you soon, bud. Be well. Have a good weekend.
You got to take care and enjoy the start of camp.
Thanks. That's Mike Tenier, founder of the Two Deep Zone on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. All right, we'll come back, and we'll check back in at Big Ten meetings. Kurt Cignetti from the Top Rope versus the SEC. You'll hear it next. Rothman 44.
All your favorite fan shows are on YouTube. Along with those fake YouTube ads like Chew This Gum and It Grows New Teeth. Experience the splendor of Bose sitting in his closet, Timmy Hall's gouty gold chains, and Matty Ice wearing a coat in 90-degree weather. It's all there. Head to YouTube and subscribe today. All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Hey, this is Michael Behrens, Big Red, otherwise known as the Czar of the Parking Lot, and you're listening to Rothman and Ice on 97.1 The Fan.
So yesterday, full disclosure, I looked at Maddie and I said,
I love you, man.
That.
I love you too, dog. My guy.
I did.
And then I said, hey, maybe we should try to dip into the Signetti presser just to see if we could catch a soundbite somewhere. And Maddie was like, eh, you know, I don't know. Because if you go to it, then you got to stay with it. And if he doesn't say anything, then it's all about that. And, and I agreed with you that it was too much of a risk live. But he was kind of batting cleanup. And I thought, all right, so defending champs, you know he's not shy. And he's heard all the rumblings of everything. And I just had a feeling that he's such a mysterious guy in that he wants to kind of downplay everything, like not make it about him, but then he does. It's weird. He's got this, he walks this dynamic of, I don't care what anybody thinks. I know what I think. I know who I am. Like, he's very secure. Like, half of me thinks like he'd be really boring. And then every now and then, it's just like he can't help himself. And Indiana really, listen, they got themselves. This is the most wild, incredible hire in the history of college football. And the fact that it already equaled a Natty is beyond anybody's thoughts.
In year two.
And the fact that he went undefeated and just somehow pulled this through. And it looked like at the end, like the rug was going to get pulled out. Beck's driving. Calls were going against him. I think it was a late hit on Beck. Mm-hmm. And you thought, all right, this is it. This is Beck's moment. Like, he's played pretty well in the playoff. Not great. And then what happens? Everybody knows what happens. He doesn't see a corner dropping. He underthrows a ball. Because that had heartbreak for Indiana written all over it. Because they really did dominate the game. Mostly.
Yeah. It's, you know what Signetti is for me now? He's must-see TV. He's one of the few coaches to where when I see him speaking, I'm going to stop what I'm doing to hear what he's got to say based off of entertainment value alone. I've always loved athletes and coaches that speak their mind.
So go ahead.
No, I was just going to say now he is that for me. Now he's very confident in himself, and this was prior to winning a national championship. So right. He's not faking the funk.
No.
This isn't, hey, now that I'm on the throne, now I'm going to talk
convenient.
About it. He's been this guy from Jump Street, which I have to respect, because he was talking before he won anything. And so at least he's being consistent in doing so.
So the SEC, there was a social media site on Twitter called SEC Unfiltered.
Twitter.
And it reads this way. The humbling of Kurt Signetti can't come soon enough.
People are ready.
Now, that's from the SEC.
I think there's some similar vibes going on amongst Big Ten fans.
Well, there was in his first year.
Well, I was going to say, maybe not right now.
Howard with the cigarette extinguished.
What I was going to say,
there was already
maybe
that.
Not at the moment, because he is going to bat for the conference against the SEC, which we'll get to here in a second. But I think that's not surprising to hear that coming from that pocket of the country. But I wouldn't be surprised either if in our neck of the woods, there's a little bit of, I'm sick of this guy too.
This is unbelievable. So Joe Shad, who's a journalist for the Palm Beach Post, he covers the Dolphins. Even he wrote, I don't know where he went to school. That's what I would like to know. He writes, someday I'd like to see Signetti take on the challenge of winning in the SEC. He just won it all. He just went 16-0. Like, come on.
Oh, St. John's University.
All right, so there's no real connection. There's no real... He's in Florida, though.
TLC's got the sound.
All right, so I don't know. There are a couple of these, or is this the one about... So this is the one, I think, with him doing an unsolicited reaction. I don't think this was off a question. This may have been. Maybe it was his last statement. It was a mic drop kind of moment about the narrative of that the SEC is deeper and they play a tougher schedule.
The Big Ten is the best league in football, and a lot of really good football teams. It's hard to win on the road. Very physical football teams, very well coached. It definitely prepares you for the playoffs. There's no doubt about it. The numbers speak for themselves. I mean, we don't run a hype machine up here in the Midwest. We believe everything's earned, not given. And when we fall short, we say we fell short. We don't cry a river, whine, and complain. All right? And that's why we're the best.
Damn. Shots fired.
So waving that Big Ten flag, baby.
Here's another SEC site. Because that I really wanted their take.
Yeah.
Worth noting that Kurt Cignetti has 6 career wins against ranked opponents. That's accurate. He's also got a natty in 2 years at Indiana.
Yeah, the dude's 27 and, what, 2 or something crazy? Like his record is absolutely insane the first couple of years. You can't do anything but respect the brand of football. I can't.
What's the equivalent of this? That if Vanderbilt would have gone, won a natty?
Very so. I think that'd be very similar. Yeah. I think that'd be pretty similar. TLC, do you have any more sound from Sig that you wanted to spin?
I do. Here's him on Pardon My Take.
How are you going to handle being the hunted? Now that you're at the top, it's like now you've got a big target on your back. It's a
I bought a bigger gun.
Ooh, that's a great answer. All right, that's congratulations.
I also like that we kind of passed.
You just
over
won
it.
The championship again. Like you're going to win again with an answer like that. Yeah,
we passed over it, but when we were talking about you winning, and you just like you kind of mumbled under your breath, like we win. That's what we did. We win. Mm-hmm. Like that's just you're just it's just coursing through your veins. Winning.
I mean, I believe in our blueprint plan process and the way we go about doing things and our ability to get everybody to think alike and perform to a standard. It's worked in the past, and I don't see any reason it shouldn't work again.
He's not downplaying it, although I heard him say, like, that's what I'm saying. He's, like, got 1 foot in, 1 foot out sometimes. Like, when somebody asked him about defending, you're the defending national champion. He's like, we're not. Like, this is a new team. I got new guys. We got to develop. We got to learn. We got to evolve. We got to become a team. Like, and then on the other hand, he's like, I just bought a bigger gun. Like, he's just one of those guys who can't help himself. And I love it because I love it for the Big Ten. Honestly, that's what I said to Pete Pufftek. This is a very rare occasion that the Big Ten got to a point where they can say, we're no longer little brother to the SEC.
This was like in Game of Thrones when House Stark and like House Targaryen and House Greyjoy and all your boy Theon, like all those houses came together to try to take out the Lannisters down in King's Landing. That's what this feels like with the Big Ten. All the bannermen are coming together to try to take out the SEC. And I like that because they feel disrespected by what the SEC is saying about them. And they're like, look, man, we've been the last team standing for 3 years running. Come take that from us. And then you guys can talk again.
It's a little bit overdone when he's talking about that we don't run a hype machine. Like, we can at least say that Georgia.
We don't run a hype machine.
We don't just beat top 25 teams, we beat the shit out of them.
Like, that's what I mean. Like, for the Big Ten, I think he was talking about, not individual. So, my point on that is, we just watched Georgia win a couple, and Bama win one, and LSU win one, and Bama win a couple before that. Like, it's not like they're only hype.
For sure.
Like, I mean, just because the Big Ten is on a nice roll here, and they are on an incredible roll, the SEC owned this thing for 4 years before Clemson gave it up.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt.
Or after
that
Clemson
did.
Gave it up.
I appreciate, though, that he's willing to play the game.
Yeah.
Same with Bielema. Like these guys this week that, you know, stoke the flame or whatever that saying is, like that's what those guys did this week. And I like it because we talked earlier about Kyle Whittingham and how some people thought, you know, that was kind of boring and lame that he didn't want to play the game. I love this type of stuff. It's entertainment. And again, it's coming from a coach that's backed it up. So if you don't like it, shut him the hell up.
It's rare to find people, especially coaches, that are like this. It's rare. I think it's more the minority than the majority of guys because coaches don't want to add fuel. They always tell their players, hey, no bulletin board material this week. And they're the coaches that are throwing it all out there. You got a guy like this.
And for me, I'm like,
it is rare.
Why not have bulletin board material? These guys were going to practice hard and be ready to go anyway. So why not?
When you add a little intensity to it, a little personal. Add personal stuff to it, I do think
here's
it makes
my question.
It a little,
I always say. Where does that show itself on the field?
I don't know if you know for sure.
So that's my point.
It's an intangible, though, that I do believe in.
I think bulletin board material is this fake thing in the sports world. To where, yes, because it's going to motivate you, but you're already motivated. This isn't like, I'm going to run a 4.3 instead of a 4.6 because he said that, you know, we're not very good. Like, I don't view it that
100%.
I don't view it that way.
Yeah, I don't believe in it. I don't agree 100%. I agree that it's an intangible that I can't tell you where it shows itself, but I also know that it can work in the opposite way and that it can distract you a little bit. It can. So it can, but I think it can work in your favor if somebody says something personal about your team, a player, or a weakness or something. It does. There's an added layer of intensity, emotion that you just can't put your finger on. The only guys that would know this are guys that probably played at the ultimate level that would be able to tell you whether it mattered or not. And maybe it, like I said, maybe it works for some teams and it doesn't work for others.
I hear that.
Because if you get too caught up in that emotion, it does affect your
focus.
That's
real. No, that is real. I just happen to think bulletin board material is a touch overblown. That's all. Because I don't think when we get to the on-the-field stuff that it really does anything. I think it's a rah-rah before the game, trash talk, all that. I think that's where it showed itself more.
Maybe I've lived through it a little bit in the 90s here, and there's stuff that you
can point to that this happened on the field because this player coach said that?
Not specifically that I can tell you where it showed itself on the field specifically, but some of it is unfounded. Some of it's not bulletin board material. Some of it is something that was said that was either taken out of context and used as bulletin board material and motivated somebody to do something they weren't going to do. I don't know.
Okay. We see it a little differently.
It's an intangible. Yeah. I think it's there. All right. We'll come back top of the hour. We'll get into the NFL. The camps are underway, but which team is not going to live up to the hype machine? That's next. Rothman.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good afternoon, I'm Tyler Danberg. A pair of aces duel tonight in the Queen City as Paul Skeens and the Pirates visit Hunter Green and the Reds at 6:10. Hear the matchup on The Fan after the Buckeyes show. Guardians host the Diamondbacks at 7:10. Mitch Brat starts for Arizona against Tanner Bibee for Cleveland, which sits two games back of Chicago for first in the AL Central. NFL CBS lead analyst Tony Romo is placed on leave until further notice after his OWI arrest last weekend. J.J. Watt will work with Jim Nance and Tracy Wolfson. Soccer, per reports, Columbus Crew defender Max Arfston is finalizing a deal with English side Middlesbrough for a fee of up to $7.5 million. In golf, Cam Young carded a 61 and Patrick Cantlay a 66 to share the lead at 10 under in round 2 of the final Rocket Classic. Ricky Fowler in second. He's 9 under through 4 holes today. Breaking sports news when it happens on The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Most shows just skim the surface, but Rothman and Ice feel like the biggest story of the day deserves a closer look. It's time for A Deeper Dive.
Sponsored by Orthopedic One, Central Ohio's most trusted orthopedic practice. Find a physician or location near you at OrthopedicOne.com.
All right, back at it. NFL training camps in full swing. We'll have J-Lew on at 2:30, though. Talk guards and Maddie's Reds. We'll give your Reds a little bit of... I've got a question for him about the Reds.
Big night at GABP. TLC's boy Paul Skeens on the mound. My boy Hunter Green on the mound.
Why don't you guys go? Just go.
Just hang out. Just
drop everything and go. Sounds I mean, I couldn't tonight. Get you guys to go, and I was going to treat the whole deal. Then I was like, we can't really make it. I was buying those Lexus seats.
I think it was me that couldn't make it.
I was about to say, I would have been...
I think that was my fault. 6:10 first pitch tonight. It's kind of early. Oh, they got a marshmallow concert tonight, too, after the game.
So I thought
it's popping tonight. There. Man.
Roasting marshmallows.
Do you know
after
what marshmallow is, AR? You probably
not. No.
I think you're shortchanging yourself. If you saw marshmallow, I think you would at least say, I've seen him before.
I agree with this.
I think if you saw a picture right now, you'd be like, no. You've never seen the DJ with the big marshmallow head with the, I think the X's in his eyes or whatever it is. Yeah. You've never seen that. Okay. No,
I haven't.
Living our own bubbles, TLC.
Where would I have seen him?
I don't know. I just thought maybe the picture would pop up sometime in
your
life
algorithm.
Somewhere that you would have seen him. Because once you see him, you're not going to really forget it.
Hasn't made my algorithm, but now it obviously will.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's listening. Well, who is this dude?
Have you looked him up?
Has he revealed himself? No, I see a guy wearing a marshmallow over his head.
I think that's part of the whole deal.
Kind of a fun costume, but I don't know. What does he do?
He's a DJ.
Sing.
He's a DJ.
He presses buttons
plays his own music?
He mixes probably a whole bunch of different artists coming together. It's an amazing job if you can get it at this level, because these dudes make millions and millions and millions of dollars doing this. Just playing other people's music. And I know it's a lot more detailed than what I'm saying. But that's kind of the job. But, yeah, he's reportedly worth $50 to $60 million. They are DJ Marshmello down at GABP tonight.
And if you think radio people are going to have bad ears when they're older, DJs probably can't hear a thing.
Well, they're not like right next to the speaker, are they? They're not. They're kind of behind it, aren't they?
Well, there are speakers everywhere at his all concert.
Right. You know who Calvin Harris is, right?
I know who Franco Harris is.
Okay.
I don't know Calvin Harris.
Just another.
Why would I know Calvin
another
Harris?
Massive DJ name. I was just trying to see if we could.
No.
Okay, you don't. Okay.
No Calvin Harris.
Avicii.
No.
Afrojack.
Nope.
I don't know those guys.
Not Afrojack. That's the. Or maybe that is who
these I'm don't sound to. Like anything. These aren't musicians.
No, I was right.
They're just people who play other people's music.
Oh, I wonder if you said that to them, how they would take that.
No, what I mean is, are they creating their own music?
Calvin Harris does. Okay. He's also all a right. DJ. But a guy like Marshmello, I don't believe, is producing music.
Not creating his own sounds.
He's mixing music, yeah. Which I think there's a skill to that for sure. Like you can't just have songs
two turntables and a microphone.
You got to have make sure those songs blend together. That is, I think, a skill to do that for hours. I don't think anybody can just do that.
When one is ending, the other one begins.
No, it's
that was James Laurinaitis' light, by the way.
Blending it.
You got to have the right song with the right beat. It just all has to make sense. You can't just go from Sweet Home Alabama to Party Like a Rock Star. That's probably not where you want to be as a DJ.
One out and brought one in. I think you could probably pull it off. Some may be better than others as a blending segue.
Yeah, but these guys, there's a science to it for sure. These guys know exactly how to blend, which songs to blend together.
I think you're underselling a hair the skill, AR.
Yeah. I do agree. And one of the recent iOS updates on Apple made it, though, so when you're on Apple Music, there's like this radio style transition in between songs, and the AI will actually transition basically to like the middle of the song or something that makes sense. And so there is some idea to the fact that, you could just mix one song down and pot up the next song and like it'll blend decent enough. But there is something impressive when it hits just right. Like maybe the same word, like you end, like if you use the word, I don't know, radio. Like, if one song has the word radio in it and another song also has the word radio in it and you transition on the word radio.
It's an art term.
Or, whatever word it would be. Yeah. There is definitely something where it's like, whoa, that was smooth.
Yeah. AR's not moved at all.
I'm understanding the live mixing of music that there are some people probably better than others.
For sure.
But I never thought you'd get to the point where you'd be like, this person is the greatest at it, and you can really tell.
Like, Paulie Diaz, right, from Jersey Shore. You remember that name.
Yeah, kind of.
He has went from that show and turned himself into a worldwide DJ. Like, DJ Paul, he's had residencies in Vegas for just DJing. And he's done that for years and years and years now.
But whose music is he playing?
Other people's music. That's the beauty of the job. It's great.
So he's at a club?
Just probably a resort somewhere in Vegas. I've seen that he's just been there for months. Come see DJ Paulie D, and he's made tons of money doing it.
That's something that I thought that I could have done as like a second job. It would be like a wedding reception DJ. Not that I've ever done that.
Maybe you do it now.
I think Jimmy Kimmel did that when he was in college. Yeah, I think that's what got him into radio. Okay. And then launched his comedy career into being a late night talk show host.
When you said Paulie D, from where?
Jersey Shore?
I thought you meant Paulie Shore. Do you guys know who Paulie Shore is?
Give yourself the boing.
I thought you might.
No.
All right.
Who is Paulie Shore?
Mitzi Shore's son.
He was the dude who was on MTV. He was a VJ back in the day and then became some actor /
okay.
I don't know what, comedian or whatever he was.
Carved out a nice career after that is what you're saying?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He did. I don't know what he was worth or what he is worth, but
kids, if you're listening to AR's here to tell you, don't try to be a DJ when you grow up.
No, there's a lot of money in it, apparently. I would actually highly recommend it. It feels like it's an acquired skill. I don't think it's something you're born with.
That's I don't think you need to be born with some DJ skill level to get to the top. I think you can learn to be a great one.
I also don't think that anybody could hop behind whatever they're behind in an arena. The turntables and have the building shaking the way that these guys do. I don't think anybody could do this. I couldn't.
We couldn't perform a concert.
I think you could learn to do it.
I don't know if I could ever get to this level. Because I think you said it. There has to be something about these guys that are on this Marshmello, Calvin Harris, you know, these guys that make them so must-see TV, I guess, or whatever. I don't know.
Well, I think they have the personality to align with it, but I don't...
Do they need a personality?
Well, this guy's wearing a marshmallow on his head.
So he doesn't.
Clearly, he's not making it on his just being able to mix music, right? Man. He's turned himself into a character
act.
Of some kind, an act.
It's an act, right. Yeah. And he's probably selling great merch, too, so good for him. That's smart. Yeah.
If we did like some sort of imposter thing on like the O-on lane on a Buckeye game day or something like that, like we went there and we put on like a marshmallow helmet that was like slightly different. Mm-hmm. I mean, so slightly different, yeah. But we threw that on and I don't know. Does the artist like put the W at the end of marshmallow?
It's just O. Yeah, it's just an OS.
So then we'll put the W on it and call it Marshmallow, and we'll wear like long sleeves and gloves and a helmet, and we'll see if we can go impersonate a DJ and see how many people will take it.
I think you would
you'll get a cease and desist letter
from him.
From S'mores and Company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're turning some heads. Kids would run up to you like, oh my God, is it Marshmallow? Yeah. Like, I think you get some of that.
But it's Anthony Rothman.
Hello. Sorry.
It's got to be Halloween costume type stuff, right?
Yes, for sure. I have to imagine there's some kids for sure that have dressed up as Marshmallow. So if you're interested,
like
folks,
looking at the costume, it almost could get into like funny, like parody horror type stuff.
Okay, like, I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that for
sure. It's Anthony Rothman
revealing himself.
Yeah.
If AR was ever in The Purge, this is what he would wear.
Exactly.
Hide his identity.
Yeah, that's right.
Marshmallows at the O-on lane, but it's actually Anthony Rothman mixing Led Zeppelin and U2 songs.
Well, that would be the tip-off right away that it wasn't him. All right, I want to get to the regression of these NFL teams because I think we have a handful of them that are up against it this year and whether they will not live up to the hype. We'll do that next. Rothman.
Bobby Carpenter was voted Best Talk Radio Personality by Columbus Monthly Readers. Catch Bobby daily on Morning Chew, 6 to 8 a.m. on the Fan's YouTube channel, the Fan app, and on demand on the 10 TV streaming app. Oh, and Tito's there too. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Partly sunny skies for us today. It's filtered cloud cover works in from the west. Highs reach the mid to upper 80s. Overnight, increasing clouds, lows in the upper 60s. We'll top out pretty close to 80 on Saturday. More clouds and sunshine. Spotty showers and thunderstorms, especially as the day goes on. For the Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Common Man, a radio veteran, has a large hemorrhoid. Timmy Hall, a good clean boy. Moonlight, says man's hemorrhoid. Common Man and Timmy.
Weekdays at 3.
The Fan. Rothman and Ice present Three Snap Reads.
Sponsored by Dr. Mark Levy. If you're snoring and not sleeping, call Dr. Mark Levy today at 1-800-MORE-SLEEP.
All right, so first of all, Chris Olave got paid.
Yes,
that's
sir.
Number one. And it reminded me of when you and I were in Vegas and we saw Olave and JSN walking around. They were doing some stuff for Wingstop or Bounty or whatever, yeah, or both. And they had the Letterman jackets on. And we took a great picture together. I should probably retweet that out. That was a while ago. And made me think, that's a $300 million foursome right there.
How much are we contributing?
Between the four of us... There's $300 million in that picture.
Golly, man.
You know, the point whatever, I don't even think we're getting the point whatever. Like, when you think about whether it's 0.25 or whatever, like, you're not.
Oh, man.
But it's amazing to me. And you know what this tells me? Because he's had some ups and downs injury-wise. And,
yes, sir.
And they've rewarded him for his career year. But what it tells me is they've got a quarterback that they like. And it's weird because I'm looking at his contract right now. 4 years, $132 million. So,
real quick, sorry. Yeah. What were the guarantees on that? Do you have that? What did they guarantee him? Let me see if I can cook it up for you.
It isn't all guaranteed. I think $90 million.
Okay.
I think 90.
I say that like it was bad. His average annual value is going to be $33 million, so it's not all guaranteed. I think 90 to 132, but his contract on the surface seems massive, but it really does match up. Like, Alave's contract, let me rank this for you. He's probably sixth. The best comparisons I can make for this are Garrett Wilson, another former Buckeye, and Drake London. So they're both around 35. All three of the 2022 first rounders have had really good careers that have landed them great contracts. So Alave's been really good when healthy. So here are the average yards per game of Wilson, London, and Olave. Wilson is 62.8, London is 63.9, and Olave is first, 67.8.
And I think all three of those guys would have much higher averages if they had better quarterback play. I think that's only. I think those numbers should be higher. I think all three have been dealing with inconsistencies under center. And I'm glad you brought up the injury part of this, because I think that's a major factor in all of this. Because there was conversations out there like, how much are we going to see from Chris Olave moving forward? When you start talking about the concussion stuff, that's a very delicate thing for anybody, but especially these athletes, right, in football that have to worry about those things. So a career year for him a season ago, a top 10 season for him amongst all the wide receivers, career highs just across the board. So this guy, we've never doubted the talent. How could you? We all watched him here in Columbus. He is, for me, one of my favorite wide receivers that's ever played here, just because of watching him. It just seems so easy and graceful how he ran, and just it never felt to me like he was sprinting. Like, he's one of those guys that I know is giving full effort, but it doesn't seem like he is. And so I've always enjoyed watching him because he does have the ability. Good route runner, good separator, and then he can make those big plays down the field. And so you brought up a good point in Tyler Shuck. What he did down the stretch, they're in. They made the investment around him with this. This deal with Olave, drafting Jordan Tyson, another playmaker as well. And then you bring in Achan, no longer ETN, as a running back to pair with Alvin Kamara. And you look around that division, a lot of question marks for everybody in the South. So I don't think anybody should be surprised if the Saints are right there in the mix, or if they win the South this season. I think they can do it.
Yeah. It's interesting that they have a really high-paid former Buckeye, and that they had one in Michael Thomas.
Man.
Like, it's... And I guess he offered Olave a lot of advice through this process, but he kind of really took him under his wing.
That's cool to hear.
And it is cool to hear, so...
And Chris is... And this is no knock against Mike, but Chris, emotionally, I think, is a little different. Like, quiet, more soft-spoken guy...
Mike, all the negotiations were private.
Yeah. Mike was outspoken and a great player when he was available. And right, Chris, I don't think they're going to be running into those issues with him.
They're in position. They're positioned right now to really make a dent in the NFC South.
I agree.
Carolina's got some injuries. Tampa's dealing with a little bit of tension.
Yes.
Quarterback versus franchise. Atlanta doesn't know who's starting a quarterback.
Right.
And I think this is their chance to maybe step through.
What are the odds looking like for that division, AR?
Let me pull that up for you. I got it right here.
I'm very curious about it.
Just tell me the division you'd like me.
What's New Orleans' value right now?
New Orleans' value in the South is plus 260 to win the division.
Yeah, I'm in on that.
I like it, too.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to look at their schedule to really be sure. Now, let me interest you guys in this. I've got two 14-3 teams from last year.
Okay.
In New England and Denver. And I'm just doing the AFC. Well, I guess we have three with Seattle, but I'll do the AFC. If I told you one of those teams was going to regress, you'd almost probably tell me both.
New England, Seattle, Buffalo?
No, New England, Seattle, Denver.
I think Denver's going to level up this year.
The Patriots just came out of nowhere. Drake May, MVP-like season. And I think their offense should be solid now that they have A.J. Brown. His offensive line should be a little better.
Yeah.
But I don't know why. I think with their schedule should be tougher, a lot tougher with making the Super Bowl. But let me look at their defense.
pretty strong core. They didn't really get after the passer a lot. The Patriots are always going to be competitive with Vrabel.
Mm-hmm.
But the AFC is so dangerous. I think they get a little bit of a hangover here. A little bit. I'm just trying to find out who I would trust the least. Maybe it's Seattle with losing Kenny, with losing Walker.
Yeah.
And everything came fun for them last year, but
I feel good about Denver. I think with the Owato addition, I think they're gonna be a problem. Seattle for me would be next in line, and then New England. So I guess I'm most concerned about New England of the three you mentioned.
You like Denver's running game? I mean, is Dobbins enough?
RJ Harvey he's okay. Yeah. It's all right. But I just think Bo Nix, with the addition now of Jalen Waddle and getting Sutton as more of your number two wide receiver behind a really, really good offensive line, I'm in on. There is one coach that's hearing the noise about his team possibly regressing, and that is one, Benjamin Johnson.
Nobody ever talks about them. All he ever hears about is Caleb Williams. I'm curious what you think about another coach throwing his name out there and whether you're dealing with the opposite situation here of hammering to your guys not to believe the hype.
Well, we're the number one regression candidate, so I think we got plenty of motivation ourselves. We talked about Caleb in the past. He's used to handling a lot of attention, so I'm not worried about that.
So off the top, you heard the reporter mention Liam Cohen, because Liam Cohen talked to the media, Jacksonville Jags head coach, and he said that everywhere I look, I don't see anything about the Jags and what we're going to be. I see 40 pictures of Caleb Williams every time I'm scrolling through social media. So that's why Ben Johnson was asked about that. I haven't heard much about the Bears being the number one regressing team this year. I haven't seen much of that. I actually think people are going the other way with it. They're going to make a leap this year.
They're not being talked about as much in Vegas as the division champ, though. So I'll give him that. Like, right now, the favorite in the division is Detroit, and the next favorite is Green Bay. So I think that's where he may be reading it, is that we made such a leap last year, and we're still looked at as third in that division.
What it's interesting, too, is you hear a lot from coaches and players that, yeah, you know, we're not hearing the noise out there. We're not listening to any of that. And Ben Johnson comes out and says, you know, we're supposed to be the number one regressing team. No surprise that he's hearing that, because we've been talking today a lot about coaches and their personalities and whether or not they like to lean into things. Ben Johnson's not running from any smoke, especially with the Packers. Like, think about what we talked about with Whittingham off the top with that rivalry and what Ben Johnson's done with the Packers and the Bears. Blank the Packers and all of that stuff. Like, just some coaches are in on playing the game, and Ben Johnson is definitely one of them.
Yeah.
And again, I'm
entertained
by it. He's not
pulling a Kyle Whittingham.
No.
Because Ben Johnson was like, I'm sorry, I'm not sorry. Yeah. I don't like them.
No, blank them.
Yeah. Their defense, though, I question a little bit. Like, I think Caleb and everything looks good. Burden's going to be a star. Like, I feel like they're going to, offensively, they're pretty scary. But I'm wondering if their defense really did enough, if anything. Montez Sweat, I think, is the only starter coming back.
And speaking of defense, I think that's fair.
That produced at a big level.
That's fair. Speaking of defense, what are the Packers going to look like early on without Micah? Like, can they hold on enough, right, without him for a handful of games, it sounds like. And so, speaking of defense, when he got there, they looked really sharp. Without him, it was kind of like, you know, we don't have Rashawn Gary anymore. We don't have Kenny Clark anymore. And so that part of Green Bay's equation is interesting to me.
I hate their schedule for them.
Packers?
Oh, yeah.
What's it like early? What do you got?
It's you know how the Browns like have every game at 1 o'clock and like it's fine? All the Packers do is play night games and primetime games and road games.
I actually kind of like their schedule.
They get starting at the Vikes.
It's just going to be a tough division.
At the Jets, fine. Atlanta, they should win. Then at Tampa, home against the Bears, home against Dallas, at Detroit.
Yeah.
They go to New England. They go to the Rams. They go to the Saints.
They need them back.
They play Houston. Like
weeks five or six, that would be nice to have them against the weapons of Chicago and Dallas.
We'll come back. We got J. Lou in 2 minutes, and we'll talk to him about the guards and the Sox and who's going to make the big move. Rothman and
Outcome.
Rothman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door showroom on Gemini Parkway.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Crowd the plate at your own risk.
It's time for
for some chin music with former big leaguer and president of the Bald is Beautiful fan club, Jensen Lewis.
Sponsored by Logan AC and Heat Services. Feeling the heat? Call the experts at Logan Services now for hot deals on Trane air conditioners.
All right, it's that time of the week. We check in with our guy, Jensen Lewis, VSiN by the books, MLB Network Radio, and somewhere poolside, we imagine. My man, how's summer brewing?
Summer is good, boys. Hey, we're getting down to it, right? Trade deadline here on Monday, so very important weekend for not only the buying clubs, but the selling clubs as well.
Yeah, that'll be the interesting. I'm so intrigued about the race with the Sox and the Guards right now. So the Guards, two back. They get three at home now with Arizona. I guess they squeak out of the Ohio Cup, okay. And so now they got three with Arizona and then three with the Mets, and then it's on. Then it's at the White Sox for those big three. Let me ask you this, because we always talk about this in football, and I know it's week to week, and you're playing series in baseball, so it's different. You're not playing one game against one team all the time. But did you ever experience look ahead? Like, does that exist in baseball at all?
Yeah, it definitely did my rookie year, AR, and it's actually perfect synergy thinking about the Central here. We were chasing down the Detroit Tigers, and it was a home series, ironically, I think, when I got my first Major League win, and that was the series we had kind of looked forward to. We had a team meeting in Texas after the infamous issue with Cliff Lee throwing at Sammy Sosa and Victor Martinez almost tackling him in the dugout, and I'm 2-3 weeks into the big league. What is going on here? We got a team meeting. What the heck? Well, after that, we ended up running off a really great stretch, and it was that Detroit series we looked ahead to and said, okay, if we can kind of pull even, if not be ahead, by the time we get there, that's sort of our last hurdle to put this thing to bed. And would certainly believe that the consequential nature of the head-to-head series now and the season series tiebreaker, guys. You know, we say it all the time. Doesn't matter what series you play in April or September, they all count the same. But at this point in the season, with how tight everything is, especially in the Central race, that will be a huge series, no question about it.
Jay Lou, one thing that's been really encouraging up there in Cleveland is what Stephen Kwan's been doing at the plate here recently. In the month of July, he really started to turn a corner. So just talk about how he's really been able to get things going on offense.
Absolutely. And you know what, Matty, that has been probably the key for this team, with even with Jose Ramirez being out. When he finally got going that last week before Jose came back, it felt like kind of a, being launched off an aircraft carrier. I think he deserves so much credit for the professionalism that he showed through the struggles. He never took it into his defense, just kept working, kept grinding, and now he is really benefiting from what really has been a huge, huge part of the top of this Guardian offense being as critically important to their wins here as of late. If he can sustain it, and you continue to get Travis Bezzano to swing a consistent bat. Obviously, we know what Chase DeLauder means. And now with Jose Ramirez back, now you can start to dream on it a little bit, right? That top four is there. The rest of the lineup, still a lot of question marks there. But at least Kwani, getting the top part of the lineup figured out, has been a huge boost.
All right, Jay Lou, Maddie's going to have one ear open for this and one ear shut with some cotton, because he's not going to want to hear everything I'm about to say. The one ear that's open, he'll like me to say that his Reds are only 5.5 back in the wild card race. When we talked last week, I think they were 6. So they've gained a half game in the wild card race. What he's not going to want me to say is that
You're doing that, let me put in the earwax from the Odyssey. Right. I'm doing that right now. Now I can't hear anything. Go ahead.
Could the Reds trade their ace, Hunter Green?
Yeah. I'll be honest, AR, it's not out of the realm of possibility that this thing really starts to catch some fire if, he goes out and throws well against Paul Skeen today. Make no mistake, the injury issues notwithstanding, when he's right, he's a top 10, top 15 pitcher in our sport. And I think that's where this Reds front office has certainly got to balance expectation, not only here this year, but what is going to happen moving forward. It is a high risk, high reward for an acquiring club. But if you're looking at potentially no baseball next year and you got a chance to land this guy, then you might as well try and get him while he's healthy. So it's going to take a king's ransom, and it should, just knowing that if you do keep him, guys, next year, and I know we say this every year about health, God, if you could have a healthy Hunter Green, Chase Burns, Andrew Abbott, Nick Lodolo, you know, the list goes on and on. That's the ultimate thing the Reds are hoping for.
J-Lew, I'm glad that AR brought this up because I want them to trade Hunter Green, and I'm really hoping that tonight when it's Hunter Green versus Skeens at GABP with a marshmallow concert, by the way, at the end of this thing, so it's going to be popping at GABP tonight. Yeah. I hope that he pitches well because then I think they should trade him after that. Is it as simple as that, J-Lew? A good performance from Hunter Green, you flip him, not so good, you keep him.
I don't know if this is just going to be one start here, Matty, that ultimately determines or if that will be the straw that breaks the camel's back. What I would tell you, though, is if he does pitch well, it kind of emboldens some of those potential acquiring clubs to say, you know what, the juice is worth the squeeze here. Why don't we go for it? And even if he does, you know, five and dive tonight, let's say he gives up four runs. I mean, this is a Pittsburgh offense that is one of the best in all of baseball. So I don't think you worry about it too much. I'm with you. I kind of hope the trade happens because what you will get back for that potential is obviously looking at guys that can impact your roster immediately and then others that will be very much on the horizon quite quickly. So it's a win-win for me if you're the Reds. If you do flip them, you're getting a hell of a package back. If not, you still got a guy you think you can rely upon next year.
Well, that's interesting because I think my motivation would be related to his health. Like to move him. And I know you said you have a reliable guy. I mean, how reliable? He missed most of the season with the surgery for the removal of loose bodies in his throwing arm.
Right.
You could speak more to that. And in four starts this year, his ERA is over 7. So I'm not saying he's not great, but I'm wondering if the motivation to move him is based on, hey, he's showing he's healthy, he's showing he's good. Maybe we take the risk out of it and move him and not worry about the future.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you on that front, AR. I get where that angle is certainly one that this Reds front office is absolutely considering, and they should. So to think that this just kind of really caught fire the last couple of days, and if he does pitch well tonight, he'll be one of those big names sought after, no question.
All right, so what do you think Detroit is going to do with Skubal?
He's gone, Matty. It's just a matter of what's the package that they're going to get and who is going to pony up. The hard part about playing chickens, knowing when to flinch, right? And it feels, I can't remember who made the analogy, but the Dodgers are like that shark fin that you see in the ocean. You know it's there. You know it's coming. You just got to get out of the way and kind of, you know, hold on for dear life. I would really love to see the Milwaukee Brewers go for it all. They've got the farm system to do it. I think Jim Bowden had kind of talked about looking at a package that they could present that would be on par, if not better, than what the Dodgers could do. You give me Jacob Mizrowski and Tarek Skubal to start a playoff series. Holy hell, with that offense, the way they've kind of run it back and been even better this year. They don't hit the home runs, but they do everything else well. You add Skubal there, that's a World Series contender in Milwaukee.
Dodgers are the favorite, though?
I think Dodgers are the favorite still. And that's even with, you know, guys, let's kind of put a pin in this Ohtani thing.
Yeah.
I remember talking to you guys a couple of weeks ago. When you put indefinite next to, you know, the pitching side of it, he doesn't play last night. You know, we don't have load management per se in Major League Baseball, but I think they're going to try and load manage him so that he is as healthy as he can be headed into October.
So let's talk NL MVP now. Where do you think we're going with that award?
I had said last week and early this week that if Shohei doesn't pitch again, he can't win the award. I think that it's going to be Pete Carl Armstrong or James Wood. And the way PCA is going right now, remember, the offense is what it is, but also he's a generational center fielder by the metrics just for his career and some of the things he's done this year. The full body of work, I understand the argument with Shohei, but you can't tell me the MVP pitches for half a season or a little bit over that and then has the issues that he does down the stretch. If he doesn't pitch again, I think it's PCA's to lose.
I'm really, when you said Milwaukee and maybe Skubal, I'm wondering, is that the best value bet right now? Is to take the Brewers at like 9-10-1 to win it all before the deadline? Or what do you foresee as maybe a good value bet now before the deadline?
Yeah, I think them or Atlanta. Don't forget about Alex Anthopoulos too. They will certainly try and entertain, you know, a Sale, Skubal, you know, and running that kind of duo out there and figure it out behind them. So I think Atlanta's still lying in the weeds on that, but I do like it. And you know what, AR, because we love our golf here, you could also do a little cross sport parlay if you wanted to do a Milwaukee Brewer World Series future and find you a top 20 finish here at the Rocket Classic this weekend, See if you can find a guy who makes the cut, and that'll get your odds up to 15, maybe 20 to 1.
All right. Maybe I know he's up there. I haven't seen anything today, but maybe I'll throw Ricky in there just for a top 20 finish. He loves that place.
Love it.
Yeah.
Ricky and the Brewers. More parlay ticket. Love to see it.
Ricky, don't lose that number. All right, my man. Have a great weekend, bud.
Will do, boys. Look forward to talking to you next week when all the dust is settled.
You got it. That's our boy, Jensen Lewis, on the Bryan Heating Coin Systems bullpen phone line. All right. By the way, not a bad little bet there, because Ricky's now 3-under through 6, and he's tied for the lead.
There we go.
All right, we'll come back with Tell the Truth, Rothman and I.
Tyvis Powell is a contradiction. He'll police the food you have on your plate and shame you into dieting. Also, he has a burner Uber Eats account, so his wife doesn't know what he's eating. T-Bone and Tyvis.
Weekday mornings at 6.
The Fan.
The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
Tell the Truth with Rothman and Ice.
Sponsored by McDaniel GM Superstore. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive.
All right, TLC, take us into the weekend, my man.
All right, Tell the Truth. Do you ever go to ESPN Cleveland's Twitter account to check up on the QB tracker for the stats on all of the Browns training camp passing?
I don't. If it comes up in the Twitter line, then I'll do it.
Twitter.
But I won't seek it out.
Yeah, I'm not running this one down.
I see
not
it now,
running
though.
This one down either. I did see during the break though, TLC, a dot from Shador to Denzel Boston on the sideline, which was a nice throw and catch and all that stuff. But
it was only 14 for 24.
I'm not. Yeah, I can't do that. But for the folks that want to enjoy it, have at it. Football is back, so I get it.
I'll say his name. Dylan Gabriel went 10 for 11.
Nice.
Taylen Green, 6 for 6.
Anything with Dylan with the ones or no? Like, I don't think that's happening, but you got anything on that?
Would be, wow. Shador Sanders took all the first team reps.
Oh, okay. So
this
maybe
was from yesterday's practice.
Oh, okay. I got you. I'm sure they'll go back and forth, AO. Or maybe one day it's all you, Deshaun. Yeah. One day, you know, it's all you, Shador.
The weird part is, you know, you look at Dylan Gabriel, and I know Atlanta brought in Cooper Rush and all that, but
yeah, they did.
I mean, the Browns should be looking
add another lefty to Atlanta. You're thinking the right way. Tua,
get him,
Penix, Gabriel.
They need what they can. They had some guy named, I don't know, John Strand or something.
Jack Strand?
Johnny Jack Strand.
Yeah. From a D2 school in Minnesota.
Moorhead?
Yes.
Oh, good call.
Jack? You say his name is John or Jack?
I said Jack, but I'll give it to you.
All right. All right.
I said D2 school in Minnesota, and he got it.
Yeah, that was a good call.
I didn't. It's the Viking in me. All right. let's go to the trade possibility for Dylan Gabriel. Right? They're going to move him. Am I wrong?
I don't think they're going to move him. I think he'll just be their third quarterback this year.
Somebody has to want him.
I think need him.
I think they just round out the room with Deshaun, Shador, and Dylan.
Who needs Dylan Gabriel?
Not even Oregon at this point.
No.
Like if in the fake world, if he called Dan Lanning, hey, can I come back, coach? No, I got Dante Moore.
Yeah.
Can't even go back there.
All right, well, maybe.
I wouldn't even say the Cardinals need Dylan Gabriel. Yeah. I'd rather have Brissett.
Me too.
You said he went 10 for 11 today.
Well, you know what? He did go 10 for 11 yesterday. So in that case, Right. Maybe I should reconsider. Let's put out this graphic for the purpose of boosting his trade value.
No, you guys do bring up something interesting, though. Like, is there a team right now in the league that would want Dylan Gabriel?
No.
And I'm with you.
Who had a worse quarterback situation last year than the Browns? And if the Browns don't want him, given their quarterback room, like that's what I said about all the people who are like, "Oh my gosh, I wish the Browns would actually trade Shador Sanders to a team that wanted him." I'm like, he's in the worst quarterback room ever. If they're not going to play him, who else will? Yeah.
So I hear you, man. I think if you
can't cut it in Cleveland, son, you can't cut it.
Sad, but true. A little Rocky voice in there.
I don't know what I
When he went to the sun part, I heard a little, do your Rocky for me? Could be a little Rocky.
I don't know how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
When he got the sun, I heard a little Rocky for whatever reason in there.
Son, you can't cut it.
Yeah.
I wasn't trying to do Rocky. I don't know what I was doing.
I thought it was more of a son, like, what's the line of, you're writing checks, your body can't cash, or something like that. It was just some weird.
Is it your body?
I don't know.
I think it's your,
your mouth?
Your mouth.
Is, yeah, yeah, whatever. I don't know, yeah.
Okay, same thing. Part of your body.
That's right. Your mouth. That's right. Your mouth.
I got you, AR.
I don't know what I... Oh, it was your ego. Your ego is writing checks that your body can't cash.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Top Gun.
Transition.
Coach Harbaugh, I love you, man. No. Love the out of you, man.
Come on, man.
Wow.
When that happened...
Strong. You know, I didn't rip him the next
time. I thought it was ridiculous.
I know you did. At the point, I thought it was fairly real. Ridiculous. I'm too naive. I don't know.
You're just too nice sometimes,
I don't know what happened there.
I mean, my God.
Coach Harbaugh, I love you, man. Love the out of you, man.
Was that when they beat Penn State on the road?
Yes.
Yeah, that was just like, come on, bro.
That was the J.J. McCarthy didn't attempt a pass in the second half game.
And now he is just...
Oof.
Wow. In the wind. I don't know if we'll ever hear from him again. Who knows?
Would it look soft if Major League Baseball adopted the double first base like they have in softball? I think college baseball does it now.
I don't know. I think it's... It would look weird. Don't get me wrong. It would look very odd. But if you protect the first baseman a little bit from getting stomped on, I wouldn't do it, but...
I don't want to see it.
Soft. He said soft.
Yeah,
though.
And that's where I'm like, is it soft?
Or just weird?
It's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Double base.
It would be weird to me. I don't even know. Like, I'm sure they've done a whole bunch of research, but are guys turning a whole bunch of their ankles or step? Like, what's the number got to get to in their mind for them to want to do that? I don't know. I don't want to see
a safety base.
Too gimmicky.
It'd be almost weird, though, rounding first and, like, getting, like,
and I think you're just cutting the normal bag.
You're allowed to go to the normal bag.
Yeah, just rounding. Yeah. And you're just cutting the first bag.
I think it would look soft. Oh, wait. I got to play a drop to transition.
All the people that was rooting on me to fail, you know, at the end of the day, they got to wake up tomorrow and have the same life that they had before they woke up today.
Okay. Don't tell me who that was. Play it one more time.
Okay. I'll play it a little bit louder.
LeBron, isn't it?
All the people that was rooting on me to fail. You know, at the end of the day, they got to wake up tomorrow and have the same life that they had before they woke up today.
Yeah, that's Bron.
Oh, I
that's Bron. That's a good call.
Yeah, but I didn't know you didn't know. Recognize his voice?
We don't play a lot of, like, LeBron sound bites.
Oh, that one hit right away.
But that, I don't know, for whatever, he sounded younger in it or it was an older clip, but that was a good call. That is Bron.
That was when the Heat lost the first finals to the Mavericks.
So that is from a long time ago. That's what I thought.
You know that his
LeBron basically saying, Jim Rome had a funny bit on this where he's like, translation, I'm rich and famous and you're not loser, so go back to flipping burgers.
Pretty much.
His Sixers are 20.
I was rooting on me to fail. Yeah. You know, at the end of the day, they got to wake up tomorrow and have the same life that they had before they woke up today.
Put the fries in the bag, bro. Yeah. That's what LeBron's saying.
I think he didn't mean it that way.
He meant it that way.
What I interpreted that as is that the envying people, the hatred of me, they still have to wake up and live a sad life knowing that that I'm in their brain. You know what I mean? I don't think it was...
No, he was definitely saying my life is better than yours.
No, see, I interpret it as that they live a sad life if they wake up every day and hate on me.
I think he's saying regardless of us not winning this championship, I'm still a millionaire. I still got a family. I think that's what he was trying to get at. There's truth for the day.
All right, where is my...
And I am looking at a half-empty bottle of Cavassier, which means that we are just about out of time.
You miss anything from our show, you can always catch up wherever you get your podcast. Just type in Rothman and Ice. Everything we do from noon to 3 will be waiting there for you. Subscribe to the podcast as well. Common Man and Timmy coming up next. It's a go-to-jail Friday, so don't move.
All right, we'll come back and talk to you on Monday. Have a great, safe weekend. Enjoy. Rothman and